Marshall. I'm gonna recuse.
All right. Surrey County Board of County Commissioners meeting will now reconvene. We're going to move on now to item number 12, discussion of possible action. We're going to receive an update to the Economic Development Financing Proposal application and consider directing the county manager to complete and submit the application to the Governor's Office of Economic Development pursuant to Senate Bill 1 of the 2015 Nevada Legislative Special Session. The financing proposal would utilize state bonds to fund up to $35 million in construction, development, and bond issuance costs for an affluent pipeline designed to transfer approximately 4,000 acre-feet of treated effluent from the Truckee Meadows Water Reclamation Facility in Sparks, Nevada, to the TRI General Improvement District for distribution within the Reno-Tahoe Industrial Center in Surrey County, Nevada. State bonds would be repaid from a portion of the incremental, which are new state and local tax revenues generated after fiscal year 2017. Within a Tahoe Reno Industrial Center tax increment area created by Story County. To the extent necessary and appropriate, commission approval for the county manager to complete and submit the economic development financing proposal may be conditioned upon the completion of certain application requirements set forth by the Governor's Office of Economic Development, as well as the completion of various project documents necessary to promote the economic and fiscal best interest of Story County. So,
Mr. Chairman, Nevada revised statutes require that I disclose that I have a pecuniary interest in the property that is included in the subject issue before us. So as such, I'll recuse myself from any discussions of the project. I'm going to join the audience, and I'll not be voting, although it's a non-vote issue today, I believe.
Very good.
No. Yeah. Oh, it is. It could be voted. It can be voted on. So I'm going to join the audience and
thank you, Commissioner Gilman. All right. Pat, you want to head this up?
Yes, sir. And I'm going to ask our guest presenters to please step forward and grab a seat on the bench. And I'll introduce them momentarily. We had what I would call a great workshop 2 weeks ago today. Jeremy Aguero from Applied Analysis, the chief economic forecaster consultant for the project, was here and kind of ran numbers in his presentation as he had presented it to GOED and now to you. Corey Hunt from the Governor's Office of Economic Development was also here to add in things, not so much dealing specifically with numbers, but with the generalities of the project. So we've got Jeremy back from Applied Analysis, Corey from GOED, but we have a new guest today that I am pleased to say is probably one of my best professional friends and partners, and that's Adam Kramer. Adam is the Executive Vice President of Strategy for Switch. He's the guy we work with. We've met the owner. The owner is live and real, I can tell you that, unlike Mr. Musk and Tesla that I've never met. But I can tell you that Adam is our go-to guy, and we're thrilled that he came along with Elise again today, who's going to shyly sit in the audience and take notes. But they're here, and I think the process that I'd like to go through, Jeremy's presented the numbers. The entire board will be making the decision. The two of you were here, along with many of you in the audience, many not. In the interest of time, I don't think we're going to review all those numbers again, although we specifically can talk about any numbers. I know that there were a number of good questions that have been generated both at that workshop meeting and also subsequent to that, and that's why Jeremy flew back up and is here to answer any of those. I've learned some things that are important. For instance, we talked about impacts on the Story County School District. I've learned that under state law, most all of what they get are exempt from any consideration in this. So the operating and the debt amounts that they receive through property taxes will not come into play for this particular project. There are some daily student attendance numbers that there could be some extremely minimal impact, and I'll be addressing that with the school board of trustees tomorrow night, but they're minimal, if any. So that was a good one to check off the list and say we no longer have to concern ourselves with that area. But what I'd really like to do today is kind of circle back and let Adam first from Switch kind of introduce, talk about the big picture. Switch has been involved integrally since really day one of this. This is there are some fascinating insights that I think Adam can give relative to the project. So I'm going to ask Adam, with your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, to take the podium, kind of give us a walkthrough, and then we can hit the questions one at a time, come on, come on.
Very good. Good morning, Mr. Kramer.
Good morning, Chairman. Thank you very much. Adam Kramer, for the record, Executive Vice President of Strategy for Switch, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I think that to talk about why this project is so important to Switch, it's to give a little history of Switch. So Switch was founded in 2000. We are a locally based company. We're built and founded here in Nevada, and we're very proud of our now global success. But more importantly, we're proud to still call Nevada home. And a part of calling Nevada home means being good stewards of our community and the things that we do. In fact, our logo is the Karma Wheel, which reflects the principle of putting good energy into the world and getting good energy back, essentially doing the right thing, the golden rule, if you will. And when we began engaging on this project 2 years ago, it was from those principles that we started moving. The idea being that rather than using potable drinking water from the Truckee River, what if there was a better solution? A solution that would allow us to use recycled water in our industrial equipment, therefore improving, first and foremost, improving the river quality of the Truckee River, the lifeblood of northern Nevada, and being able to help support the community. And through the leadership of Story County, through the county commissioner, through the county commission, and through the county manager, as well as through the partners in Reno and Sparks and the Truckee Meadow Water Authority, we've really put together a plan here that will be what we believe is a win-win-win scenario, truly the objective we try to achieve in any project that we are a part of. The first win being, of course, as I mentioned, the environmental impact, improving the river quality. The second impact is being able to use the treated effluent water to allow for further economic development here in Story County, to allow for growth. While Switch has the water it needs to continue to grow, what this project does specifically is addresses an issue that comes up more and more. Switch is powered by 100% renewable energy. We look to be powered by 100% recycled water. And by doing that, that's an important element for us in attracting large technology companies to continue to grow and build in our ecosystem and to build here in Story County, promoting further economic development. And I think the final piece is the opportunity to really create a regional win, a win in which the entire Story County, Washoe County, leadership is involved in doing something that benefits truly everybody. And I think that that's a unique opportunity and will begin to open the door on more regional opportunities for wins. And it's something that I personally am very proud of to have been part of. This project that we come to you today with is something that has been in the works for more than 2 years. This is not something that comes easy. And so as we come to you today, it is not only fully baked, but it's something that hit all the check boxes we had for building a win-win-win project. And it's really why Switch has been so instrumental in being involved with this and working side by side with everybody here. And I truly appreciate the support from the professional staff here at the county, which has been incredible, not just on this project, but overall for Switch's growth in the area. And it's one of the things that we really shine a light on when we're attracting other companies to come here and working with them, whether that be Google or companies that co-locate with us. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, before we start questions of this group, I with the help of our friends at the Industrial Park, I brought a prop in today, and I would intend to kind of answer first off a question that was asked that I think was a great question about why isn't the developer paying for all of this? And I'm going to stand, excuse me, and I will talk as loud into that microphone as I can. But I want everybody to kind of focus on this particular prop back here. You can, Jack, whatever works for you. I just want you to be able to see it. I think one of the questions that was asked that was really important is, you know, this is a developer project. The developer ought to be paying for it. And I think it's really important to understand, and if a picture's worth a thousand words, see what's happening out of the industrial park. And I want to focus on three major land masses. Those are outside of the developer's domain now, and
that's almost all that's left. There are a few more, and I'm going to point those out. But we're going to talk about what happens not only within these land masses, but also in other land masses that are just about, like within days, ready to close escrow and move again outside the developer's domain. And if I did my job right, by the time we're done, I think we can see the developers rapidly making almost a stage left exit, if you will. Let's talk about Tesla here for just a minute. That's this dense. There's 3,300 plus acres in Tesla. It's almost like I can't pad it out, but that is the gigafactory. That's about 1,000 acres. Okay, it's not about what happens in that 1,000 acres. It's what happens in the rest of this area, which is why a reliable and affordable source of water has to happen if folks like Mr. Musk, Kevin Kassiker, and the Tesla team are going to make many other things happen, like semi-trucks, automobile manufacturing, parts manufacturing. All that's going to happen probably outside the original pad that there is enough water for. But it's going to occur out here. You can say the same thing about Switch. I checked with Adam and I have his permission to, you know, to make this public. They own 600 acres, plus or minus. They got another 400 acres that, you know, they have rights to. There's a potential in this area for 8 million square feet of additional data centers. That probably won't happen, you know, unless there is a reliable, affordable, more affordable, and cleaner source of cooling water for their equipment. You know, we'll see some. There's enough water for Switch to finish what they initially envisioned, probably more so like in an area like that. But it's what happens after that. Same is true with Google, although I'll be truthful with you. We know nothing. You know, Google, I know, has about 1,200 acres in this area. You know, what are they going to do? We don't know, but they're going to need water. They have some. They didn't buy this property without some water. But again, it's a matter of just like the Switch and Tesla, what happens beyond that. And then let's move to three areas that aren't plotted yet that I can't talk about who the buyers are. But we have an escrow pretty much, if I have this right, essentially in this whole area over here that is going to close escrow possibly even by the end of this week or sometime early next week. It's been in due diligence. Chris, I'm kind of looking at you for a nod. Probably 60 days, 90 days at least. You know, but we're closed and ready, and that's got a real viable investment buyer leading the charge. We met with them. We know them. I can tell you they have other projects that you can see, feel, and touch. And again, it's what happens in this area. If we don't have water and reliable water, and affordable water, probably the most important, and clean water for these companies like Switch and like Tesla, you know, we get some logistical data centers. Those won't be hard, but those aren't the big ticket items that generate, you know, the personal property tax, the real property tax, the sales tax. You know, we want the manufacturers and the data centers like what Mr. Kramer brings to the table. I also know there's a couple of other areas in here, and I'm going to be trying to micro draw this. There's a whole area in this area that is in play right now with what I'm told is a very, very exciting company. I honestly have to tell you I've not met with them yet, but what I know about them is they're expressing a phenomenal interest in that area. And what we're looking at basically is the creation of the Eastern Silicon Valley, if you will. You know, these are the types of companies that come in. They don't want to build Toys R Us or Walmart distribution centers. No offense to those folks. They're great tenants. They're great corporate citizens. They want to build the massive investments. And then we got one more area out here that I find really interesting. This is about, by the way, where the ribbon cutting is going to be for the for USA Parkway on the 28th. But this is the South Valley. There's an interested buyer for that area out there again. And they're talking high tech. They're not talking distribution centers or retail or any of that stuff. So it's what happens in these areas. And all those are now out of or almost out of the control of the developer. So to me, the answer to the question, why isn't the developer doing this? If you go back to 2 weeks ago, we talked. The developer has $31+ million of upfront infrastructure that they have to put in the park. We're not doing anything in the park. We are only building the water highway, if you will, the pipeline to the park. So the developer has $31 million of inside the park improvements. The developer is turning back 1,500 acre feet of water so that they can meet the requirements of the Truckee River Operators Agreement. That'll go back, and then $7,500 an acre right now, you're looking at 11 mil, I think. What I didn't know, and I think Chris pointed out at the last meeting, is there's about $3 million in pre-engineering costs that have also been done. So again, the developers put a lot of money into this with really, in my opinion, not a whole lot more potential return. So, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, poor Roger, poor developer, you know, what I am saying is they're making their investment, and it really is, I think it's the future of these three properties that these guys own outright, the developer has no interest in, and these that are about to be owned outright, or will be someday. That's why we think this is the right structure. So I hope I've at least, you know, shed a little bit of light on that, if that makes sense, at least to the commission that will be deliberating. You know, if we don't have the water, some stuff will happen, but it won't happen to the potential. I think we've got estimates, as I recall, if nothing happens and we have the water that we have left, which is not all that much,
you know, there'll be development, but there'll be development at cents on the dollar. We're looking right now, if the lift, if you will, Jeremy, I'm kind of looking at you because you've helped me with some numbers, but the lift, if we have water, can be 4,000 acre feet specifically of affordable, reliable water. The lift is, you know, anywhere conservatively in terms of about $500 million in revenue for the project. And if you get a little more optimistic as to what really happens with the switches and the Teslas and those, that could be anywhere around $1 billion. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
So I thank you. I hope I've answered the question why the developer and what the developer's in it for.
That's good. Mr. Guerra, thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, Jeremy, I've got a couple of questions I'd like to ask before we open this up for discussion here. I'm sure Commissioner McGuffey has questions for you as well. So some of the questions that are being fielded out there that I'm getting from constituents is once this pipeline is built out, who's going to own the pipeline and who's going to be responsible for all of the maintenance on this pipeline in the future?
The answer to that question, sir, is that the TRIGID will be the owner and operator. They will be responsible for all of the maintenance and operating costs, both of the pipeline and the on-site improvements that are required.
All righty. Bear with me as I don't have my questions in numerical order here. When you were doing your analysis on the sales tax collection in this special tax incremental area, how long is it going to take us when tax collecting until we get to a break-even point of making the bond requirement payment each year until, say, we get into a surplus or a water or a windfall or waterfall, however you want to propose that?
Mr. Chairman, it's a little bit of a difficult question to answer. I'll try and answer, and if I don't do it in a sufficient way, you can certainly correct me, and I'll try to do that. The brief answer to your question is you'll be in a windfall situation almost from day one. And the reason for that is that any bonds that will be issued will require 3x coverage, which means that we will need 3x the amount of revenue for every $1 that we have to repay, the state has to repay, in terms of principal and interest. In terms of the sort of, I think, longer-run question, which may be at the source of what you're asking, which is, when is it that Story County effectively breaks even for its portion of the dollars that go in? The answer to that question is relatively quickly and are largely dependent upon things we haven't even modeled yet, including what the county manager just went through. I want to be clear. We took what we feel to be a remarkably conservative approach to estimating the revenues that would be available to repay these bonds. The three projects that are in the pipeline are not ones that were ever contemplated as part of generating property tax or sales tax or MBT. So I would tell you that to the extent that those projects close, to the extent that they come online, and to the extent that they are predicated on the existence of a renewable water source, a stable, efficient, and affordable water source, that you would have a payback almost instantly.
Okay. Finding out today that the school district is exempt from this, does this skew your numbers at all in doing your analysis?
It'll skew the numbers a bit. We're continuing to work through the actual finance portions. We started with the idea of what was necessary for the application. There's all of these revenues that go in. We're now just thinking about how the tax increment area itself will be exempt. There are two portions of the tax, the property tax, that go into the school, that are dedicated to schools. One is 75 cents, that is for school operating rate. That's applied statewide in every district. There's another portion, about 14, a little more than 14 cents, that goes to school capital. The treatment of those is different depending on any number of different projects. In this particular case, both of those would be exempt. The brief answer, that's the exemption that you're talking about, which essentially insulates the school districts from the property tax piece. I do want to put a little asterisk next to that. There is a piece of the tax that some projects will pay, the sales tax that exists here, 7.6%. 2.6 points of the 7.6% sales tax go to what's called the local school support tax. Those monies are called local school support tax, but they are local in name only. Those dollars are collected locally. They're then transferred to the state, put into the state's distributive school account, and are used to fund every student in a per-pupil guarantee across the entire state of Nevada. So the amount of any loss that would happen here would be minimal. On the property tax side, the second part of your question was, does this affect our numbers, Eddie? It will, because of the idea that in the out years, when some of those taxes would have otherwise inured to the benefit of the district and been used as additional credit to secure the bonds, that will be slightly less. But I will tell you, at the point at which that becomes a material consideration, we already have something like 12 times coverage that's out there, well above the 3 times coverage. So while, yes, some of those things will evolve to affect the numbers, the idea that they would affect the credit or the security or the ability to move forward with this project are minimal at best.
Okay. So the county going ahead and creating this special tax increment area, all the new businesses are going to come in. Are these people going to be looking for tax abatements from the state as well? So in essence, we might not be collecting any taxes to pay for this because they're going to get abated through Mr. Hunt's office as you go ahead.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, again, difficult question because you're asking me to sort of foresee the future. What I can tell you is a couple of things. Even the projects that are there today are not 100% abated. Projects like Switch and the construction that's going on that physical facility are generating both property tax and sales tax. All of the co-locating companies that are in Switch today are paying the state sales tax, so that's the 2% out of the 7.6%, which are generating substantial amounts of revenue as they exist today.
So does your analysis based more on sales tax than it does on EBOR?
No, sir. It's based on all three of the large revenue sources.
So is your analysis taken into consideration, though, possible tax abatements in this state?
Yes, sir. It does.
Okay.
So in the future projection, we assume that roughly 50% of every project that is built during the period would receive some type of abatement. Or it would receive a 50% abatement across the board. Again, that is more than what would exist for the totality of TRI today. We believe that to be a very conservative assumption overall.
Okay. At the point where the tax collection exceeds what the bond payment necessary, those additional or waterfall there, they all get distributed right back into each account as would be if there was no bond payment?
That's exactly right, Mr. Chairman. So essentially, let's imagine we needed $1 million to make the bond payment, and we had $3 million worth of taxes that were generated by the tax increment area. The additional $2 million would have to be distributed back to the state, to local governments, to the school district, to the county, based on its proportion of what it paid in to that district.
Okay.
The money is completely restricted to only that can be used for the repayment of the indebtedness.
We're good. Okay. Moving along, it's my understanding that all property taxes will be combined. We'll get sales taxes will go in there. We'll get 1 cent of the 2 cents that the state collects on their sales tax side. We'll get modified business. Do we know what percentage of the modified business tax we have? Do we get all of it?
50%, sir.
50% of the modified business tax?
Yes, sir.
Okay, 50% of that. We're getting 50% of the state sales tax.
Correct.
We're getting all the ad valorem. Are there any other taxes that I'm missing?
Sales tax, ad valorem, and MBT are correct. Mr.
Okay.
Chairman, if I can just make one point of clarification just on the question. I do want to note that when we're talking about a data center like Switch, we're talking about the 2%. But there's also activity that goes on like the construction of the data center itself, which is subject to more retail sales and use tax. So in that particular case, it would be 50% of the 7.6% as opposed to 50% of the abated amount.
Okay. That brings up an interesting question now. I'm glad you said that. So who's going to oversee the collection and distribution of all of these taxes that are being collected?
The Nevada Department of Taxation. And I would love to tell you, Mr. Chairman, that that's going to be some type of easy thing to do. It will not.
Well, they've done such a stellar job so far in collecting the taxes.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to take the bait on that one. I will tell you that we have worked with your staff, both finance staff and your county manager. We recognize the limitations from the Department of Taxation, the challenges that they've had, and I think those are legitimate. I'm not here to cast any aspersion on the Department of Taxation. I think they've made an attempt. It's a difficult thing to do. What is going to have to happen, which I think underscores everything that we're talking about today, is going to have to be a public-private partnership. The folks at Tesla, the folks at Switch, their colleagues in any of the other developments are going to be there, are going to have to be active participants in reporting that information. And they're doing a lot of that today. We're going to have to do it better than we were doing it historically, and we're going to have to get the cooperation of the Nevada Department of Taxation in order to make it work.
If this project was to turn out as large as you're suggesting it is, it would almost be like the governor's office is going to have somebody at taxation there, a right-hand man down there following this whole thing, you know, all the way through, because...
Yeah.
We can't it sounds good on paper, but we can't trust them to follow through on this because of past experience.
Mr. Chairman, I'm committed to working on this issue, and your staff has indicated that this is an issue that has been a real challenge for Story County and one that needs to be resolved. Whether this project goes forward
right.
or whether it doesn't,
right.
this needs to be involved. Whatever I can do to be helpful in that regard, you have my commitment that I'll do it.
Okay, now I don't know if this question would be for you or Mr. Hunt, but you can take the first shot at it
okay.
here. If there is a revenue shortfall, is that shortfall split between the state and the county, or is the county on the hook for 100% of the shortfall? Should the tax revenue not come up to what it needs to be to make the bond payment?
Yes, sir. So I'll answer the question first, and then Corey can tell me if I get anything wrong. I think it's important to note that these are state bonds. That means that the bonds are backed by the full faith and credit of the state of Nevada, not the full faith and credit of Story County. That's thing number one. Number two is there's a nuance in Senate Bill 1 that specifically says that in the event that revenues come in under expectations, that is to say that the 3x coverage, it turns out not to be sufficient, and the 1-year reserve we burn through at the state level, there is a provision that comes in that says in state law that in the event that that unlikely circumstance occurs, that whatever the shortfall is, that Story County or the issuing the county that's put in the application has to make available the uncommitted ending fund balance of the county. Now, I've been doing this for 20 years now. I think I'm fairly astute relative to public finance in the state of Nevada. I've never seen the term uncommitted ending fund balance in there. And the statute specifically says that the Department of Taxation has to determine what that means. Now, I'm not going to try to opine up here exactly what that means. Let's imagine that it is the worst case scenario, that the state has no money, that they come to Story County and they say, we want your uncommitted ending fund balance, and we believe that the full amount of the $2.1 million that needs to go to repay these bonds in this year, that needs to come out of your ending fund balance. As part of this application and as part of the discussion, we have worked with the folks at TRI who have indicated that they will provide a guarantee for that payment of those monies, whatever that amount would be, relative to ensuring that Story County has no liability at the end of the day for these bonds.
Okay. If, in fact, Story County did have an ending fund balance, they could go ahead and support a shortfall in this. Would the this is a question from the comptroller's office. Would the state go ahead and invoice Story County, or would they simply sweep our bank account and take the money out?
You know, Mr. Chairman, I don't know what the process of that would be. I will look into that, and I'll get back with your staff and find out exactly how that would work. I would imagine that the state of Nevada would take whatever steps necessary to ensure that it self-helped.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Aguero.
Yes,
I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner McGuffey now for his questions.
Thank you, sir.
Well, you pretty much covered my questions. I guess I want to talk about the abatements. Let's say Tesla has an abatement, a big abatement right now. So if this was to go through, would they be getting an abatement on this?
Commissioner, that's an excellent question. Mr. Chairman, I don't know what the protocol is. Am I okay just to respond?
Back to the Commissioner. Yes.
Thank you, Commissioner. So the brief answer to your question is no. There's no such thing. There would be no sort of abatement on an abatement. What is very interesting in terms of the way, particularly the property tax, and just using that as an example here, right now Tesla receives a very significant property tax, I think, based on your question. There are two sort of concepts that are here. One is the establishment of a base, and the second one is the creation of tax increment. What the base means is whatever taxes were generated in the prior fiscal year before the tax increment area were created have to go back to the state, to the county, to the school district, exactly how they were before the tax increment area was created. Now, in this case, that creates a very interesting question, right? Tesla has all this assessed value, but isn't generating any of the taxes from that assessed value. Bless you. Isn't generating any of the taxes. Based on the advice of tax counsel, bond counsel, what we understand and how we have programmed it is that all of those monies, the abated values today, would go into the base and would not be counted as part of the increment. So, again, there's no abatement on the dollars that are currently being abated today. Theoretically, 7 years from now, when those abatements begin rolling off, they would inure to the benefit of the county, of the state, and the school districts. They would not inure to the benefit of the tax increment area.
I guess my biggest concern, I see the benefits, but my biggest concern is that if the tax increment area doesn't meet its financial obligations, and Story County's on the hook, so I would rather see something that would protect us from that.
Yes, sir. This has been part of the discussion since day one, at least part of the discussion that I've been involved in. I haven't been going through this for 18 months. Mr. Kramer has. But again, I would like to reiterate that the folks from TRI have made it clear, as has your staff, that a condition precedent to moving this project forward will be that guarantee that ensures that the only path for the state to be able to recover from Story County is that ending fund balance. In that same statute, it says that the taxing powers of Story County are not pledged as credit. No one can come to you and say, we want you to increase your property tax. We want you to increase your sales tax. That cannot happen based on how Senate Bill 1 is written. And so, again, while that guarantee is important, I do want to reiterate that it is my understanding that that is a condition to moving this project forward from where we are today.
So,
what's your... Think about a 30-second, because they test this every day at noon.
So I think it was the previous meeting we had a workshop on this. There was a mention that there's a potential that the industrial park, you know, we owe them $45 million for the infrastructure, interchange, and all that. And so there's a it was mentioned that there's a possibility that if there's a shortfall, that we could pay that, but it comes off of our bill, basically. So I don't know if that's still in the works or not. So.
Commissioner, what I can tell you is that those the dialogue in terms of how the form of the guarantee are still being discussed. What I can tell you is that whatever form that takes, what Mr. Witten has indicated to us as we go forward is that it has to protect Story County. We'll continue to work through that, and we'll certainly bring it back before it's finalized.
Yes, absolutely. I understand that this will further the economic growth in the park, and that's what we want. That's our tax base. That's our primary tax base. That's, we're supporting everything here. From the I think we do realize that this is basically free money from the state. In a sense, it's basically if it's paid off the way you say it's going to be paid off, then Story County doesn't have much to worry about here. You know, there's still that if.
Yeah, Commissioner, I hesitate to say that anything is free money from anyone, including the state, with our friends from the state here in particular. Not that I wouldn't say it if Corey wasn't sitting here, but I think that I tend to look at it slightly different. Story County has the ability to leverage state dollars that would otherwise be collected in this county and would be deposited into the state's general fund and would largely go to more populous counties like Washoe County or Clark County as a result. That doesn't mean that some of the tax increment's not going to come from Story County. Of course, it will. But the fact that the state is issuing the bonds and a significant share of the repayment of those is going to be the result of state dollars staying in Story County, being used to repay those bonds, I would agree, I think, with your conclusion, which is that is a significant benefit to the county. Yes, sir.
Yes, if it, let's say, goes to per plan, it'll basically pay for itself. That's pretty much
multiple folds.
Right. I'm good, thank you.
Oh, yeah? Okay. All right, then, Mr. Sater.
Yes, sir.
How about coming on up? Let's talk to you a little bit. Good afternoon, Mr. Sater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bob Sater, representing Tahoe Reno Industrial Center.
Very good. As Commissioner McGuffey just mentioned that I think the Story County is looking at a backstop to protect its financial, to protect the treasury, the county treasury, in the event that there is a shortfall. And as the developers, is Mr. Norman prepared to go ahead and backstop this this development should there be a shortfall?
Yes.
As Commissioner McGuffey stated that that perhaps it would come off with the part of the money that Story County owes the developer for the infrastructure that's been put in place. My thought on this is a little bit different, is that I would like to see the developer guarantee any shortfall in cash, not as in debt. And if you're following me on this, and if it were to come to the point where the developer was unable to make the cash payment, that if it did have to come off of debt, that we would impose a penalty for having to use treasury funds. So, for example, if there was $1 million shortfall and the developer didn't write the check for $1 million, that perhaps Story County were to go ahead and reduce our debt to the developer by $1.5 million, making a 50% penalty for not coming across with the cash as opposed to taking debt. Do you think the developer, Mr. Norman, would be in tune to accept maybe something like that?
I can't give you that commitment from the podium today. That concept has been mentioned to me by your county manager. What we envision is on or before the time that you have before you, if you approve this proposal, that you have before you the ordinance for the tax increment district, that you will require written agreement from the my client, the master developer, on these issues, the guarantee and what happens if the cash isn't available and that sort of thing. We fully anticipate being prepared to provide you that agreement. I think we could say that the concept you just expressed has to be considered under negotiation at this time, but we definitely understand where you're going with it and we'll seriously consider it.
Because my thought on this is that we run a pretty tight ship in Story County, and if there's a significant shortfall on the debt on the bond obligation, that I don't want to jeopardize any services and supplies that the Story County residents are, you know, need to have. And so if the developer is willing to go ahead and make payment, that's good. And should he not be able to, it would reduce our debt 50% faster, I guess, or one-third faster to the developer. So
understood.
Okay. Thank you for that. Do you have any questions?
No, that was okay, good question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Pat, you had something you wanted to bring up?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Before you invite public comment, I wanted to address a couple things that, again, I think have come up either in the interim 2 weeks or changed. The first is we have now fully engaged two individuals. So we have Mr. Aguero with Applied Analysis basically working for the project, if you will. As much as I respect and admire and appreciate, you know, his professional expertise, he's not independent to us. And Jeremy and I have talked about this, so he understands and completely agrees. We've gone out to our financial consultant that does our annual debt management reporting and that we turn to often. That's Marty Johnson from JNA. Marty has plugged in, has begun to look at items such as the initial analysis, and believe me, there's a whole lot more analysis behind these numbers. This is the summary, Marty's digging into that. He's proactively talking directly with Jeremy, discussing things like impacts on the school district and others, interpretations of SB 1. So we've got, I think, our person engaged and representing us extremely well. And then on the legal side, Keith Loomis has been fantastic. He is on, I guess, a vacation trip this week,
yes,
which is why Mr. Morris has joined us. But Keith will continue to be our main go-to guy as we go through things. But I'm sure Bob will have a role as we look at the developer agreement or the agreement between us and Trium, the backstop and the penalty amounts and how that's done. But our bond counsel is critical in this too. And we have engaged the same bond counsel that we use frequently. And that's Jennifer Stearns at Sherman and Howard now. So she's fully engaged and is talking, I believe, to the state's deputy attorney general and to hopefully Mr. Sater as necessary. I'm not sure that's really, you know, a key component there, but we have attorneys talking to attorneys. So we covered there. The other thing I'd like to address is something that has definitely come up recently. And I say this very cautiously because I have no idea the credibility of a publication called This Is Reno. I probably have seen a few things from it. But I want to kind of address the evolution of this thing and the rapid evolution. When I talk to Jeremy, when I talk to Adam, when I talk to Corey, these things are changing almost daily from some of the things that we're learning, and sometimes multiple times within a day. And they're not changing in a major way. We're checking those boxes, as I think one of you mentioned. Back in May 8th to be exact, This Is Reno published information that talked about all this concept being addressed before the City Council on a Wednesday that could potentially pipe 4,000 acre-feet of water. I'm not going to read the whole article. Proposes that Try and Switch will build and dedicate all the necessary improvements, and that the GID will be 100% in with really nothing incumbent on the county. We are light years beyond May. I mean, it's just that may have been said
Certainly wasn't said by us. I'm not saying it wasn't, but I'm saying that every day this process becomes a little more clear. That could be a very accurate statement relative to the in-park improvements. It may not be an accurate statement relative to the out-of-park. There are so many variations and complexities of this. So I just want to caution everybody, as you read stuff, try to make sure it's current. And most importantly, if you have questions, call us. You know, everybody should know our office number, hopefully my cell number. I'll tell you what I know, and I'll check on what I don't know. Jeremy, particularly for the folks in the school district and others, has been very generous with his ability to say, you know, give me a call. I'll answer it. And if I won't, Brian will, and my office or somebody will. So if there's misinformation out there, rather than foster that and fan that, I think it's incumbent upon us all. There's been two great town hall meetings. I thank Mr. Carmona, I think, for being an impetus in that. Austin, I know, attended, I believe, both of those on our behalf, and I think there was some good information put out. At least we came back, again, with a feeling very similar to the workshop we had 2 weeks ago, where there were great questions, hopefully answers, maybe not every answer. We're still working on some. But if you read an article back in May, a lot's changed between May 8th and August 15th. So,
great.
Okay.
So what we're going to do next, we're going to open up to public comment. So can I see a hand? Can I see hands of who would like to testify today? Okay. Okay. If normally what we do is we have a 3-minute timer here. It looks like there's only about 6 people who plan on testifying right now. We won't use a timer as long as you'll stick to the points of this meeting, you know, what we're here to talk about. And you can either make a 3-minute statement or you can ask questions. You can ask questions that have to do with the Jeremy or Corey or Bob, but if you ask them through the chair and not directly, okay? So whoever would like to come up first, come on up. Nicole, you've got John, you're here first.
Nicole
will be up next. So, and if you'll remember to identify yourself first for the record so that staff goes ahead and gets everything accurate.
John Miller from the River District. The one thing I want to ask commissioners is, will there be a significant amount of water coming to the tribe from this project?
From the information I have is 4,000 acre feet.
So they'll have enough water for the businesses in the tribe.
I'd have to go back to Jeremy and ask Jeremy.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Jeremy Aguero, thank you for the question, sir. My understanding is this will account for about 40% of the processed water and will be sufficient to allow for the build-out of Phase 1 of TRI.
Okay, thank you. Okay. My second question is, when a phase-out comes out, how many people will they employ approximately?
I think, you know, I'm going to take a generic stab at it, and that answer, John, is it depends. It depends who it is. Manufacturers are oftentimes more employment intense. Data centers are usually not, although they have an awful lot of people, you know, that do cycle through their service contract agreements, as I'm sure Switch has with all their tenants, that say you got to see, feel, and touch your servers every so often. Those people will come through. I guess the answer is we haven't really forecast that, but that is the next wave of jobs that will come. I mean, will they be massive amounts? I toured the Tesla factory again yesterday for the first time in 2 weeks. The level of automation in there is amazing. So there really is no defined answer, and I'm looking for Adam to say that's true, false.
Adam Kramer for the record. That is true, and I think one of the important elements of this is that with the availability of this water, it allows Switch to do what it's been doing in Southern Nevada. We've been a nonstop construction project since 2007. Come recession or come not, we've employed 700 to 1,000 workers pretty much on average of construction, just on construction alone. And our anticipation for this project is that I may be retired before we're done building. So to be able to have that continued growth opportunity.
The reason I ask this is because every job that a person gets, that means there's one less unemployed. They are now paying taxes instead of getting tax money. So to me, if it builds up more people employed, less people on the tax rolls, I think it's a good thing. It's a win-win for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you, John.
Okay, Ms. Bard, you have your hand up next.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. First of all, I spent 20 years in semiconductors, so I understand the need for water for manufacturing. We had multi-billion dollar fab facilities that ate water all day long. I don't oppose TRI getting water. It needs the water. Manufacturing has to have water. That isn't what I have objected to in the past. It's not what I'm going to object to today. What I object to, and I believe I may speak for a few of our citizens, is putting the burden of the cost of taking that water and putting it in TRI on the backs of the residents. Because as I look at this, we, the residents, aren't getting anything out of this. And let me explain by what I mean by that. TRI is expanding. All of this expansion is going to require the county to provide services, if not in addition to probably a couple of other fire stations, more police, so on and so forth. And yet, the incremental taxes that are going to come from the new businesses, which you're planning to use to pay back that bond, is going to go to pay the bond off. Where is the money coming from that is going to pay for the additional services and additional county infrastructure required to support TRI? Your answer is going to be, well, it's going to come from money generated from taxes in TRI. Okay, that's nice. But up until recently, we have been told by the commissioners and Mr. the private Lance Gilman, TRI principal, that TRI has put Story County on the map. TRI is going to generate millions of dollars of chicken in every pot. That as a result of TRI revenues, that we, the citizens of the county, would be getting benefits, including potentially a tax rollback or an abatement or a rebate, whatever you want to call it. And yet, as I look at the funding model in the presentation, the existing taxes that we currently get still aren't enough to give us those abatements, doesn't seem to be enough to give us enough money to put back into our community, whether it's to fix Pipers or St. Mary's or whatever. The existing revenues aren't enough to do that for us. Those aren't going to change necessarily because of the abatements going forward in time. Incremental income is going to be diverted to pay the bond, and we're going to have more expenses in TRI that additional revenues are going to go to. So I'm here to ask you, what do we as the citizens of Story County get from this? And I'm going to ask the question and continue to ask the question, why doesn't the developer pay for this? It is not our expense. It is to feed the businesses in TRI. Those businesses can float a bond just as easily as Story County can. So
I don't think private businesses can float bonds.
They can sell. They can sell debt, and they can raise.
In any event, okay. The defense of the TRI, when you say we're not receiving any benefit, I would have to argue the point that during the recession, Story County laid off one-third of its staff, closed fire stations, laid off firemen, deputy sheriffs, and every staff, every office in the courthouse had to lay off staff. What it's done for us, it's been able to go ahead and open that station, rehire all of these persons who were laid off during the recession, affords us to go ahead and finance new fire engines and ambulances, and keeps our children in Story County schools instead of being merged into other counties. All of these have happened because of the tax revenue collection in the existing TRI right now. If we didn't have, I don't know, I think the comptroller estimated we get about $8 million in ad valorem revenue out of the industrial park. If we didn't have that, we wouldn't have paid paramedics. We wouldn't have four fully functional paid staff fire departments with paramedic service. There used to be three volunteer departments in the county. So when you're saying, what are they doing, that's what we're getting.
It's
we're getting,
my understanding getting, that's come from a negotiated
getting,
contract.
We're getting,
half.
We're getting,
it's not coming from taxes.
Wait a minute. It is coming from the taxes. That's why we never used to have paramedic service in Story County, maybe before the day you moved into the county. But we have it in all of our stations now. It's very expensive to operate that because we don't have a hospital in this county. So that's part of the cost of doing business at the county level. That's why it costs a lot of money to run these fire departments and the sheriff's office. For public safety, is very expensive. The school operation is very expensive. So that is what the industrial park has done so far for the residents of Story County.
Well, the other thing, too, is we haven't raised rate taxes in, I don't know, how many years?
Oh, gosh.
We're holding the tax
as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
And we're well below the cap. If I may, before there either are additional questions or not. Number one, you know, the question has been asked and answered, and I'm not going to circle back again and waste the commission's time or the public time re-answering the question as to why the developer isn't doing this. I think I've answered that question. The other question is, you know, what do the people of Story County get? And I mean, there's a long list, but I think most importantly, if you turn to page 22 of Jeremy's presentation from last time, there's a solid red line across right about $2.1 million. That's the baseline, if you will. That's the debt service. If you take a look at this chart, everything above this red line becomes that waterfall, that surplus. Now, that's not all ours. As you've asked and Jeremy has answered, that's distributed back proportionally to the agencies. The state will get their fair share of it. The county will get theirs. The school district will get theirs. But that's what's in it for this county. That's what hopefully should enable us, through Hugh, with Jeremy's expertise in some ways, that should help us continue to take a look at whatever form tax relief does take shape. So, again, there's the answer. I'm not going to circle back on the developer.
Okay. I think. You have a follow-up question?
No, that'll
okay.
Be it.
Thank you. Okay. Who else had their hand up over there? Mr. Phillips?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mark Joseph Phillips, a Virginia City resident. It's the 15th of August, 2017. I'm speaking to a agenda item 12. Okay. It's important. I want the record to note the absence of our district attorney, Ann Langer, and also absent is her deputy district attorney, Keith Loomis. In the absence of the district attorney's office, it would be illegal violation of open meeting law for you to sign, you know, enter into any contract or make any
agreement. You're
agreements.
Correct, but we do have representation from the district attorney.
Well,
Mr. Morris,
I got an attorney general's opinion dated August 1st, 2006, opinion number, which I'm submitting to the clerk, 2006-04. Question. May the Story County District Attorney contract with a licensed attorney to handle litigation and advise the commission without deputizing the attorney? Answer. The Story County District Attorney may not contract with a licensed Nevada attorney to handle litigation and advise the Story County Commission without deputizing the attorney as set forward in NRS 252.070.
Mr. Phillips, did you want to talk about this?
Mr. Chairman, it would be a violation of open meeting law for you to not continue this.
Let me tell you something.
Hey, I'll tell you what.
We're talking about item number 12. Do you have something to discuss on item 12?
Well, you approve this today. I write you up tonight. We've gone through this before.
Mr. Phillips, either get to something on item 12.
In the absence of the district attorney, I can make a case that you're knowingly and willingly violating open meeting law.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thank you. All right. Mr. Carmona, you had your hand up. You
finished speaking. Oh, I did not.
Oh, you didn't? Okay. Come on up.
Thank you, Board of Commissioners. For the record, my name is Sean Smith. I'm the owner and president of Black Eagle Consulting, Inc., which is a geotechnical firm, materials testing and inspection company located out of Reno, working in northern Nevada for the last 20 years. The issue that we're talking about today, item number 12, is a complicated issue as far as funding goes, and I haven't been briefed on all the details of it, so I don't want to comment directly on it. But what I do want to comment on in regards to the item is the credibility of the companies that are located out at Trick that would be served by the pipeline. We've been working with Switch and Tesla and many of the other companies in the center for the last 4 or 5 years. And I'm here to talk about how those companies have come in. They've been true to their word. They've been able to back up everything that they've said. And they've worked with us and many, many, many other companies in the region. From an economic development standpoint, you know, our company was hurting after the downturn. We had gone from about 40 people down to about 20, about half that much, and we're now up to about 60 people, and a lot of that is attributed to the work that Story County, the management at the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, and the new companies that have come into town using local firms and bringing the economy back to where we were in, you know, 2005 and that era. So what I'd like to say is that I think as a community, Northern Nevada, as a state, we need to do what we have to continue the great work that has been going on out of the industrial center. And if the pipeline, if the effluent line is a catalyst to bring in more wonderful companies that is going to support this region, then I think that we need to figure out a way to support that.
That's okay. Thank you for your testimony. Okay. Who else had their hands up? Okay.
May I stand Carla? Here if I speak loudly?
No, because we won't be able to get you on the microphone, Carla. You're going to have to come up.
I'm sorry. I can't make it that far. Sorry.
Who else? Chris, I saw your hand up.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Thompson?
Chris Thompson, TRI Project Manager, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Commissioner, Mr. County Manager, and Mr. Deputy DA. First, a big thank you to the Governor's Office for being here. And Jeremy, your work has just been superb, and thanks to Switch for all the help on this project. I think I'd like to reinforce one point Adam made that often goes kind of by the wayside as we're talking about all this money, and that is this. The Truckee River is a lifeline for the wildlife and the people in the northern part of the county. The entire river district, TRI, Painted Rock, that river runs along our entire boundary. And with Tumwa, with the sewer treatment plant, putting 4,000 acre-feet of effluent into that river, I think is running a risk at some point that there's going to be a major incident. 4,000 acre-feet annually is the equivalent of 3.5 million gallons a day. Imagine if there was an incident at that plant for even 12 hours that fouled that river. And imagine the carnage that would be caused to the wildlife up and down that river, the effect on people in Rainbow Bend and in Lockwood and their children who routinely use that river, the effect downstream with the people that irrigate, and the effect on the tribes that painted at Pyramid Lake. That river, you know, imagine our regret when we have the chance today to protect that important lifeline and that important feeder for not only wildlife but our people. And we have a great chance to do that with this project. That's number one. And number two, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, may I skip to the chart over here?
Sure.
I just want to add a little bit of detail, Mr. Chairman, about the incoming businesses.
Okay. You can speak into the microphone at the end.
Yes,
of the
sir. Table. Okay, will do. So to orient everybody, here's I-80 and the river and the Union Pacific Rail. Here's TRI Phase 1 along the river.
TRI Phase 2 here along the USA Parkway arterial. Here's Eagle Valley. So this is a Tesla site, about 3,300 acres. Switch is about 600 acres with possibly more. Google is down here with about 1,200 acres. All of these sites are only a fraction filled out with infrastructure, Mr. Chairman. As Pat said, I would say there's less than 10% of this land, probably less than 5%, that has facilities on it today. So this is open season for more facilities for all these companies. With the companies we have coming in, we have a very large, well-known developer, well-capitalized, as Mr. Witten said, with 700 acres right across the street and just north of Google. They are planning a tech park to put in a tech campus for this entire swath of 800 acres next to Google. Why? Because Google's here. It's very attractive for these companies to come in and park next to Google. The other company is coming in over in this area, is in contract for over 1,100 acres, another massive site. And let's just say that it is an internet currency company, cutting-edge, high-technology, internet-based company that is in contract for 1,100 acres on this site. There still is a little bit more land out here, but all of this land that's in contract now that's in this area is tech-oriented. The South Valley down here is about 1,100 acres. It's a coherent valley that is suitable for a business to set up a campus. We have got we'll just call it a micro-technology company, has been out here twice with their engineers and architects looking at that valley. But it's very suitable for tech because it's secure, there's ridges all over it. And so this everything that's unsold down here is oriented on tech and being looked at on tech. And, Mr. Chairman, the last thing I'd offer, just in terms of growth patterns, as the chairman knows, in the last 12 months, we've had 633 new businesses applying for a business license for the first time in Story County. And most vast majority of that has been in here, good portion in Tesla, but also elsewhere in the park, to support all those tech companies. Tech companies are very plant and equipment dense, and that requires other supporting companies. And that brings more sales taxes, that brings more companies into the park. And I just have one final comment to offer, Mr. Chairman. And that's this,
our local blog tends to have political knife-fighting quite often. But I think on this deal, it's been very helpful. And I know the Mr. Chairman, I know the commissioners, and I know the county staff, and I can assure you that TRI has heard the concerns and heard the questions. I think that, Mr. Chairman, you, during your fine cross-examination of these folks earlier, I think you hit on many of those. So the folks that have posted criticisms or questions, I hope know that everything that they put on there is heard and considered, and in some cases makes good changes to these deals for the county. And so we thank them for that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the time.
There is something. Okay. Who's next? Now, Carla, we can wait. We'll wait for you to make your way up here.
No, sir. I just wanted to stand at the straight. But that doesn't suit you.
We have an audio-video set up, and we can't get you on video, and we can't get the audio unless you're up here.
I absolutely understand.
I know you want to speak, so we're more than willing to wait for you.
Is there a way to move the microphone closer?
No.
Well, the cameras are up on the wall behind you. Okay. Catch it?
Yeah.
Okay. No, everybody has a right to speak, Carla, so come on up.
And you'll be happy to know it's quite short. Because I only have to speak now. Let smart people ask you the question. Throughout my 50-year marriage, I have been...
You need to identify yourself, Carla.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Carla McPartland, Virginia City Highlands resident. I have been involved, unfortunately, with
many Fortune 50 companies and many Fortune 500 companies. So I kind of have a gist of what's going on. I just have a simple question. TRI is a private business. More power to them. Build away, you know, be successful. Why are we involved? Why are they coming to the county? If they want to build and they want to do this, terrific. More power to them. But why bring Story County in it? Give us a debt. We get nothing back. I don't understand. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Sam Toll, Gold Hill, for the record. I'd like to present some signatures that were collected during at the meeting that Mr. McGuffey attended and the one that Mr. Osborne was at in Lockwood to the county clerk. That's okay?
Just put them on the desk.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure.
And I appreciate not being on the shot clock. I'm going to start at a 30,000-foot view, and I'm going to drill down to numbers and facts. I have been in contact with Mr. Wood. I spent 2.5 hours yesterday at the Department of Taxation trying to get my head around some of the numbers that we're talking about. But before I'd like to start off at the 30,000-foot view, one of the economists that I read is a guy from France. He did his work in the 1850s. And he suggests that in the economic sphere, an act, a habit, an institution, or a law produces not only one effect, but a series of effects. Of these effects, the first alone is immediate. It appears simultaneously with its cause. It is seen. And in this case, we see Tesla, we see Switch, we see wonderful tech companies that come up. However, the other effects emerge only subsequently. They are not seen. And we are fortunate if we foresee them. And part of being able to look into the future and see what happens, not only requires a crystal ball, but some serious thought. So some of the unseen things that have occurred from the TRIC Parkway are the USA Parkway, which has cost $25 million. The rail spur, which has cost $4.9 million. The bridge that accompanies it at $2.3 million, and now a $35 million pipeline, which is going to benefit companies at the park. That's roughly $67 million, and about $45 million of that, county taxpayers, my daughter, my grandson, and all of us in the room here are on the hook for. Now, as Mr. Witness pointed out earlier, we got a great deal on that money, but nonetheless, it is a debt that we owe collectively. When you take into account the fact that TRIC has sold USA Parkway and the land in 2014 to the tune of about $42 million, now what we're looking at with this pipeline is that we are going to be supporting and subsidizing the park in one way or another to the tune of $110 million. So some of the other unseen things that are a result of this park, and again, I am a pro-business person. I sat in the front of a paycheck for 25 years. I shook Steve Jobs' hand. Two of my former employees are Apple vice presidents right now. So, I'm a 100% supporter of everything that is done out there from a business standpoint and recognize the benefits that come to Northern Nevada. However, one of the unseen things that we're seeing out there, and we heard from several residents in Lockwood yesterday, is the Bay Area traffic. There are periods of time on the freeway coming and going that remind anyone who's been in Los Angeles of the delights of trying to get around down there. We've seen, as principled conservatives, we've seen our state turn blue. And much of that is due to the growth of, or two words, Clark and Washoe. So regardless of what side of the fence you sit on, that's an unseen effect of this. The median housing pricing is at $370,000 right now, and yet an average job, a manufacturing job, according to Elon Musk, pays about $21 in his factory. So two people working at the Tesla plant will not be able to afford the actual housing that's available to them in Reno, and so they're going to have to drive from Fernley or Dayton or from up here, perhaps. An interesting note is that 50% of those houses that are available in Reno are actually rentals that are owned more and more by Wall Street REITs. And so the dynamic of the city is changing. And if you look at Edon and you look at Gilman used to be on it, Edon, is that right? They're projecting a 4.3% growth every year, which means that Reno is going to double in about 20 years. And I'm not sure that many people who live around here fully understand what that means. But if you've driven in Los Angeles, you'll probably know that will be what we're looking at in the future. So now let's drill down to some of the specifics. So you had mentioned that the park generates about $8 million in tax revenue.
I believe so.
Is that about right? So yesterday I tried to get that number from the Department of Taxation, and your assessment of their operation is, let's just say it's fairly accurate from my experience anyway. They had no idea. They absolutely could not tell me, directly or even indirectly what we got this year. But I'm holding in my hand a public record from 2015, and it suggests that we received $4.8 million in revenue from TRI. The stipulated project cost, the debt that we owe for the $45 million, our $45 million credit card payment, was $2.3 million, and it left us about $2.4 million in our general fund. Now, as I recall, the negotiations for the budget this year required that every single office cut their original budget estimates on some level. So the reality is that we are being asked to tighten our belts. And if the numbers are close to for 2016, they're unaudited yet, and so we don't know what the numbers are.
Please. We asked them to cut their projected budget for next year, not cutting how much money they received in the previous fiscal year.
Right.
Okay? Everybody asks for more money than they need, and then we have to go back and ask them to cut it back to a reasonable level. That's just the way government works.
Yep.
Okay.
Very good.
So it's not a reduction. It's not a reduction in last year's revenue.
Right, because as we know, that budget is in the books and is done, and we're not being reduced. But this year, they were all asked to trim their numbers back based upon what they were asking for. Is that a true statement?
That's okay. What they're asking for.
Okay, good.
Not based on what they received
gotcha.
The prior year.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. So if we take 2015's numbers, where we have received from TRI $4.8 million, we've paid them on their credit card $2.3 million, that leaves us with $2.4 million into our fund. Now, regardless of the projections that have been presented to us, as I said last time I stood here and we were talking about this, we are one, tweet away or one North Korean EMP blast over Seoul away from all of those projections being, pure fantasy. And so living in the real world and dwelling, Mr. Whitten, on facts and actual reality that we live in today, if this bond was available for us now and we were in next year and we were being asked to pay the $1.05 million, that would leave us $1.4 million for our budget. And is that a fair assessment, right? Because half of our payment is what we would be on the hook for based upon the tax revenues. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I believe the answer to the question is no. I tried to follow all the math. I'd be more than happy to circle back with you on it to make sure that I have it correctly. But I think what's important to note is that the monies that are made available to pay the bond don't exist on any of the revenues as they exist today. They must only be new revenues based on new investment and increases in revenues. I think what you're referring to, sir, is what we would call base value, which means that those funds have to continue on a go-forward basis and continue to be allocated either to Story County school districts or the state and the like. Again, I don't know that I quite followed all of the numbers, but I'm happy to follow up on that.
So let me then clarify. So let's just say that that we're standing here a year from now, and new business has come in, and that new business represents $500,000. Or what? So that $500,000 would go to pay would be applied towards the $1.05 million, which is our half of the $2.1 million that the bond is obligating us for. Is that right? And then we'd have to make up the difference.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Jeremy Aguero. Again, I think you had me until the end. Using the hypothetical that you just presented, there is a half a million dollars worth of revenue that is generated in terms of tax increment from the tax increment area as a result of it coming in under expectations. In the first year, the answer to your question would be no, because the state treasurer is going to require a one-year reserve, so there would be no impact on Story County in that year. Let's imagine, to extend your hypothetical for a moment, that in the second year there's another only half a million dollars that's generated, and therefore somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.6 million is short on the bond. The process as it currently exists would require the full faith and credit of the state of Nevada to repay that bond. After the state does that, it would have the ability to look at Story County and say, do you have an uncommitted ending fund balance? Now, I think that it's important to understand that an ending fund balance is essentially the money that is left over after all of the services that you just alluded to have been paid for, budgeted, whatever that was, as part of Story County's process. So that the idea that either your fire department or your school district or something the like would be negatively impacted would be unlikely. That said, the ending fund balance is still money that belongs to Story County, and will be clear. As I noted before, the idea of what is uncommitted is completely unclear to me. But I think the other piece of it is, as was mentioned by me, and then I think reiterated by conversations that happened after me, is the TRI has committed to making up the balance. So I see no circumstance based on how this deal would be structured in which the government services as you set them out would be negatively impacted as a result of this project.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm glad you mentioned the down payment, so to speak. Corey, is your last name is Hunt, is that right? I misspoke. I think I called you Wood. I apologize. So we have spoken on the phone a couple of times about the nuts and bolts of this. And one of the things that we talked about was the 3X sort of reserve or 3X ratio from a tax income standpoint that meets the bare minimum of this bond measure. You just alluded to the down payment. And in trying to do some research on how bonds work, my gut came up with a number of about $8 million that we're going to have to come up with as a down payment and in reserves in order to even qualify for that. Is that a fair number, number one? And number two, who has to pay for that money?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, again, I think it's a very fair question. The answer to the question is that the bonds are actually slightly more is issued than what is required to pay the bonds. So the down payment, if you will, and you're using that as an example. I realize an analogy. It's really not a down payment
right.
So much, but it is an excess amount that is essentially deposited into an account, just like probably many of us keep money in a savings account in order to have that. In terms of the maximum annual debt service that is estimated on these bonds, that amount is $2.1 million. So the requirement is roughly $6 million in order to cover the $2.1 million. Now, I want to be clear about this, is that that doesn't mean that $6 million is being essentially redirected from all of these government resources. Rather, it's still the $2.1 million. The balance of those monies are redistributed because they are not required, assuming all projections are met, to local governments, school districts, the state, and the like. I do think it's important to note that because we're only talking about tax increment, the way the debt financing would ultimately be structured is that it would require a smaller payment in the early years and a slightly larger payment in the late years, such that some of these other projects that we're talking about here have the chance to come on and contribute to the tax increment area and ultimately help the repayment of the bonds.
And the second part of that question is who comes up with that money? Where does that check in? Whose account writes that check?
Well, I think it's important to note that the whomever these bonds are sold to, they're the ones that ultimately have to give the state the proceeds of the bonds. So let's imagine that it's an institutional investor that goes out and buys these bonds. They would be the ones that would write that initial check. A portion of that initial check would be deposited into a reserve account, the balance of that into a construction trust fund account that could be drawn on as the pipeline was developed. Now, I think the second half of your question is, well, who's responsible for both the amount that goes to paying the bonds and who is also responsible for generating that the coverage amount? And that is the same part, right? Some of that is going to be the state in terms of state sales tax, for example. Some of it's going to be local governments in terms of ad valorem property tax and the like. Again, the coverage is to provide assurance that the bonds will be able to be repaid. It does not increase the cost of anything to anyone.
And Hugh doesn't have to write the check.
No,
you are in control.
No,
very good.
Sorry. For the record, Jim, you're growing. No,
thank you. Thank you. Okay, so I appreciate, again, the fact that I'm not on the shot clock, and I'll try and wrap things up here. So so right now we have, as Ms. Bard alluded to, additional build-out means additional services. We're going to have to pay for those on some level. All of these things are going to, from the way I look at it, are going to consume much of the benefit that would be potentialized from the build-outs out there. So you know, I'm looking at the entire picture again and wondering why it is that, as you alluded to earlier, and I forgot your name, I apologize. Adam, thank you, Adam, from Switch. Why is that the private people, and let's say that it's not TRI, let's say that it's the players out there that are on the map out there. What it is clearly in their best interest to have access to this water, and the future of the businesses, the three businesses on the pink sections, really aren't going to be able to build out there without it, or at least reach the potential that they have. And so, rather than asking the taxpayers to shoulder that burden and to take cuts into our future tax revenues, why are you all not more actively involved in the process and, in fact, 100% behind this in financing it specifically yourselves, since your companies will, in fact, be the genuine beneficiaries of the pipeline that we're putting in?
Okay, and Sam?
I'm sorry.
You've gone over 10 minutes now.
Okay, yeah, and that's it. I'm done.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Adam Kramer for the record. I think first and foremost, this is a benefit for the entire region, not just for any of the companies here. You live in Lockwood?
Gold Hill. Down the street.
Okay. But you live in Story County, which borders the Truckee River. Improving the river quality of the Truckee River benefits every single person in this region. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
That's first and foremost the driving intention of this. Now, in order to make this agreement work, in order to actually improve the river water quality, you have to have somebody who, one, can actually offtake the water, which would be the industrial center. Two, who can actually commit water resources to rededicate to the river, which is coming in, if you look at the total amount of water being committed, in excess of $22 million. That's not coming from taxpayers.
Right.
It's coming from the private sector. So, therefore, I look at this as the win-win scenario where every single person is actually contributing to this to the benefit of every single person, including to the entire community, yourself, the Story County residents, myself, a Northern Nevada resident, living here, and to the benefit of all of us. So I don't think that it's a fair assumption to say it's just for the benefit of these large businesses. It's truly for the benefit of the entire region and building a long-term sustainable impact. And to your other point about some of the benefit may go to support services in that area. Yes, some of the benefit will do that, but the rest of that benefit will go to support you, will go to support the residents of Story County. And I think that is the intention of this project. That's the intention of economic development, is to create more tax revenue to actually support the entire community. And that's what the numbers and Mr. Aguero, who has built a reputation over the last 2 decades here in Nevada of being very spot on his estimates on what those returns are, and been a guiding force for how the Nevada legislature and local jurisdictions make decisions, has been able to recognize those benefits. And I think when you look at the unemployment rate in this region, that has been driven by economic diversification that comes through economic development benefits like those from the state governor's Office of Economic Development, I think you see another benefit. And the point that came earlier, and I apologize, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but when you get people off the unemployment payroll and onto our payroll, and we're paying MBT,
We're paying them benefits. They're actually able to go to work. I think you also have to look at that. So I think it's a much more macro picture than to say that, well, why aren't the developers paying? We are. We are paying in many, many different ways for the benefit of the project, for the citizens, and this is, we're all in this together. We all are residents here. We're all in this together, and this is truly for the benefit of the region, and I hope that answered your question. I appreciate your dialogue.
Thank you. One last thing. This is a moving target, and in the famous words of Nancy Pelosi, we got to pass this thing before we know what's in it. I urge you gentlemen to wait until the target has perhaps slowed down before we vote on it to approve it. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Sam. And along these lines, I mean, this is a moving target, and that's why we're coming up with new questions all the time, because there are a lot of important questions to be answered on this. And so, you know, everybody stays up at night, you know, making notes of that about what are we going to ask next, because, you know, what direction is it going to go in? So, yeah, we don't know all the answers to this. But, you know, as things go forward, you know, we're thinking about what are we going to do in the future, you know, because, you know, we're going to be delayed in collecting these taxes. Well, these taxes might not ever come if we don't build the pipeline. But the thing is, too, is we're looking at $5 million in abated taxes in the industrial park right now. As those abatements expire and that revenue starts coming in, we should have nice flow of additional income coming in there, too, according to the comptroller's office.
But all we can count on is our overhead. Thank you.
Right. Any more public comment? Okay, Mr. County Manager, where do we go from here?
This morning, gave you a proposed motion. It would be staff's recommendation. Just to kind of summarize what we've done to date, we've had a workshop. This is scheduled and could be an action item. Hopefully will be an action item. It would be staff's recommendation that we continue to further the process. I submitted, and we've used the analogy more or less as a place marker to the Governor's Office of Economic Development at the deadline of June 30th. We submitted what we knew to be and understood to be an incomplete application. We would propose that you direct staff that you support the submittal and continue to direct us to work with representatives from GOED, from TRI, from Switch, from all the affiliated partners on this project, only on our piece, only on the pipeline portion, to continue to complete that application. Our understanding clearly is, one, once that application is complete, GOED has 45 days in which to determine if it's a qualified project or not. My belief is, knowing Corey's presence here, having attended the last GOED board meeting, I would anticipate, as long as we can feed enough information in the meantime, that I doubt it's going to take 45 days, to be honest, but you never know. Once we get that indication, then we are still not bound and committed in any way to establish a tax increment area. That is done through establishment of the tax increment area by ordinance, which takes two readings, takes a first reading, followed by a second reading subsequent to that, and then 15 days after that. And in the meantime, like I said, we get more and more clarity every day with this process. So there are a couple of conditions in there that I think are, one in particular that I think are very important. You would be authorizing staff to continue to work on the project and the project partners, but it is clearly understood that there will be a guarantee, as Mr. Sager has indicated, is being discussed and worked on with TRI or an affiliate of TRI to indemnify the county for any potential revenue loss sourced to the project. And that has to be in place before any tax increment area would be created. So that has been a fundamental negotiation point and thought point at the staff level, and we strongly recommend that your motion have that qualification in there and criteria.
Very good. So anyway, there's a lot of moving parts here, and I think we should see it. I'd like to see us move forward on this. Like we say, we can. We're not committed to this.
Right. There's no commitment.
But I think we.
I agree with Mr. Whitten's assessment that we need to have a a guarantee in writing, basically, from Tribe that protects Story County from having to pay the big bill.
Exactly. Okay, I'm going to ask one more time if there's any other further public comment. Hearing none, then Commissioner?
Okay. I move to support the economic development financing proposal as submitted to the Governor's Office of Economic Development by the Story County Manager on June 30th, 2017, and to direct staff to work with the project representatives, GOED, and others to complete, finalize, and submit the application on behalf of Story County. Such submittal, however, must include a guarantee by TRI or an affiliate of TRI to indemnify Story County from any potential for revenue losses sourced through the project, and must require that the formation of any tax increment area created in support of this project must be brought back before the County Commission for its review and consideration.
Very good. Thank you. I'll second your motion. It's been moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. If the clerk will note that Commissioner Gilman abstained from voting on this item. Okay. Gilman, Commissioner Garrell.
Thank you.
Adam, thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Okay, next up.
To explain the problem.
Right now?
Yeah.
I recommend Bob go ahead and explain information.
Okay.
Responsible for.
All right. Okay. We're going to delay going on to the next item, and our special counsel, Mr. Morris, is going to do an explanation on his duties in the district attorney's office.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. I do have a contract with the county, but it is not as a deputy district attorney. It's outside counsel. I am here today for the next item, actually, which is something that I've been tasked with regarding job description. I was asked to come today by District Attorney Ann Langer. My understanding was that she was going to be here at the initial part of the meeting, but I think she's ill and was unable to come. My understanding is Keith Loomis is out of town on vacation. The opinion that Mr. Phillips gave you comes to the conclusion is the District Attorney may not contract with a licensed Nevada to handle and advise the commission without deputizing the attorney. And so, as I said, I don't have a contract with the district attorney's office to handle sitting with the board. And I think traditionally Ann has been here every time, except a couple of occasions when Mr. Loomis has been here. I don't think I've sat through a whole board meeting with the board. I would point out that NRS 252-170 requires the district attorney to be here for payment of claims, and that's the only requirement that they be present. If it is a problem, I would suggest that we could redo those items with a district attorney here or a deputy district attorney here. During the meeting, I don't think I've given the board advice on any matters. I have to say I sat up here, and that may have been better if I had been sitting in the audience than up here. But I think under those circumstances that the way the meeting has been handled so far has not been in violation of anything.
Very good.
Can I confer for just a minute?
Yeah.
So should we reopen the consent item and specifically pull this item off and continue it to the next date when we have district attorney because that's paying claims?
Okay.
Okay. So staff's recommendation, Mr. Chairman, based on what outside counsel has just enlightened us with, is that we, before moving on to the next item, we move back to item number 6, the consent agenda. Specifically, I am asking that item number Roman numeral number 3 be pulled from the consent agenda and discussed individually, and I'll take you through that one next.
Are we going to continue that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. So, we're going to move back to item number 6, Roman numeral 3. And at this point, we're looking to go ahead and take this item off and hear it individually. So, is there any public comment regarding this item?
Are we going to hear it today?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
We'll hear it next. So, if I can get a motion to go ahead and pull this off, and we'll hear it individually.
Okay, I'll make a motion to pull item number 6, 3, off the agenda. It would be the consent agenda, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Off the consent agenda so that we can hear it today.
So, okay.
I'll second.
And move in second to go ahead and pull number 3 off of here separately. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
And continuing on, Mr. Chairman, to hear item 6, Roman numeral 3, individually. This item is listed on the agenda for possible action, approval of payroll claims in the amount of $389,197.29 and account payable claims in the amount of $1,056,241.04. In the absence of the district attorney or a sworn deputy district attorney, staff recommendation that that item be continued until the September 5th meeting.
Okay. All right. Is there any public comment regarding item 3 and number 6? Come on up.
For the record, my name is Keith Judson. I live in the Virginia City Highlands. The only question I have on this, does this mean that people will not be paid the payroll and vendors will not be paid until the next meeting of the commissioners?
With, and I'll double-check with concurrence from the clerk, this is a layman's answer. This is not an attorney's answer because we don't have an attorney present that can answer that. But my answer to that is no. This is normally procedural. Through Hughes' office, we process vouchers on an every two-week basis. Items move on. This just takes it to the commission, basically, for concurrent approval and public disclosure of what we're paying, Mr. Judson. So everybody should get paid on time.
All right. So if I understand, they will get paid, and this is more of a technicality item.
That is correct in my opinion.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Okay. Very good.
Did we vote on that?
No.
No, so we took public comment. Yeah. So, motion to continue this item to September the 5th.
I'll make a motion to continue item 6.3 and move it to the next meeting September 5th in this courtroom.
I'll second the motion.
We move to second to go ahead and continue this to September the 5th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, and again, without advice of counsel present, you know, I'm somewhat winging this, but as an abundance of caution, I would strongly suggest that the commission revisit approval of the consent agenda now without item 6, Roman numeral 1, that will be heard next at the request of a member of the public, and without
item 6, Roman numeral 3, that you just acted on through continuance. So you would be approving the consent agenda without both those items. I'm just trying to make the record clear.
I got you. Okay. All right. So we're going to go ahead and revisit the consent agenda by going ahead and removing item 1, which we're going to hear next, and then also continuing item 3 to the September 5th. Is there any public comment regarding the consent agenda once again? Hearing none, if I can get a motion to that fact.
No, we're only going to make a motion to rehear item 6.
We're going to get a motion to go ahead and approve the consent agenda
without
those two items.
Without, okay. We're going to modify and approve the consent agenda, removing item 1, 6.1, and 6.3, or 6,
right.
Number 3.
Correct.
Okay.
Have a motion?
Got a second.
Got a second. Move to the second to approve the consent agenda with those notations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right. Moving along now to item 6.1. This is for possible action, approval of resolution consenting to relinquishment and land transfer agreement between Story County and the State of Nevada Department of Transportation, by which the maintenance easement encompassing a portion of Waltham Way, where it intersects the USA Parkway, will be transferred to Story County. Okay, Ms. Bard, you asked that this be heard individually. Did you have a problem with this?
No, I don't understand what it is and why we're doing this particular action.
Okay.
I can cover that again, although this, yes, I can cover this one. I'm knowledgeable of it. There's been discussions that USA Parkway was sold off, and the sale of USA Parkway, if you will, is a little complex, particularly when you look at the Tesla transaction, if you will. Portions of USA Parkway that the county had never taken dedication on, i.e. the portions that were never paid, we had no dog in that hunt. So that was a transaction between the developer and NDOT to build USA Parkway and the highway. Another critical section was a section from Peru to the end of pavement, which occurs at the southern terminus of Electric Avenue. We had taken dedication on debt on that, and I do not recall the specific amount, so I don't want to state it. It wasn't huge, but huge is a relative term when you're dealing with roads. But we did take debt on that, and through then District Attorney Bill Maddox, there was a mechanism that said the state can be, in essence, a better provider or maintainer of that property. So we ceded that property back to the developer. The developer then sold it to NDOT again. Critical to it is the remainder of it, from I-80 to Peru, the initial section, if you will, the northernmost sections. That was not involved in the transaction whatsoever. Story County had already taken ownership of it through deed dedication and had already taken assignment of the debt that was due on it for the construction of the property. And again, I don't recall the specific amounts. They were several years back. In that process, our bargaining point with both the state and with the developer was, we're not going to give up ownership of that. We're not just going to walk away from it. But tell you what, state and parties involved, if you will gladly entertain you executing a maintenance agreement in perpetuity. In essence, you're responsible for the whole highway, whether you own the road and the land underneath it or not. So when we went through that process with both the state folks at NDOT and the attorneys and everybody involved, we had it all mapped out. Unfortunately, at the intersection of Waltham Way, where it intersects with State Route 439 or USA Parkway, there was an error, if you will, and too much was covered under that maintenance agreement. There were sections of Waltham that were never intended to be covered by that maintenance agreement, and in reality, NDOT can't maintain that portion There's traffic islands in there. Their equipment won't service that area. Ours will. It was just an error. So long story somewhat short with a lot of detail is this is just cleaning up an inadvertent act back in, I believe, either late 2014 or early 2015 when the document was executed.
Come on up.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. So we're getting this back, or we're giving it to them?
We owned it. We still do. It was never given to them. We are removing this from the maintenance agreement, the maintenance easement, if you will. They are no longer responsible for maintaining it.
So now we still own the maintenance?
We will own that portion of Waltham Way, yes.
Okay. So the rest of USA Parkway that we gave to them for TRI to sell to make money on, for which we still hold the debt, is being maintained 100% by someone else or being maintained by us?
Okay, let me show you. On USA, 100% maintained by MDOT. So let me show you again on the map. USA Parkway is 100% maintained by the state, regardless of who owns the land underneath it.
Okay, okay. Except for this piece, which you just
no.
said. Oh, no, we don't.
USA Parkway is 100%
okay,
maintained,
right.
Whether owned by the state or owned by the county.
Okay.
Okay. The section in question is on Waltham Way. It is this intersection right here. Here's USA Parkway.
Okay.
So we're simply dealing with this piece, removing it from the maintenance agreement.
Okay, so that is our stuff.
Yes.
So we own it. Okay. So thank you.
All right. Any other public comment regarding this item? If I get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the resolution consenting to relinquishment and land transfer agreement between Story County and the State of Nevada Department of Transportation.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded for approval. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Very good. Moving on now to item number 13. This is discussion only. We'll take no action. Workshop on revisiting the county manager's job description and discussion on possible alternatives, including approving either an, the verbiage is right here, approving an ordinances, I think it's approving an ordinance, enacting county policies, or using a contract. This was my deal. I asked the district attorney's office to look at the job description of the county manager. This is something that we routinely do is we keep upgrading job descriptions through human resources and county ordinances and all the stuff where it's got old language and outdated information and things like that. And as we're moving into the next generation coming up here, Pat's given an indication that here in the not too distant future, he'll probably retire from the county. And this is something that we need to do with all of the departments where we're having change orders, that is to go ahead and get everything straight. And that's what we do in the county, is to try to improve at every turn we do. This is not a reflection on Pat's performance, never intended to be that or insinuate that. This is just to clean this up. It's the job description is 10 years old. I think it was written when Pat was brought into this position. Pat might have written this himself. But in any event, Mr. Morris has been tasked with updating this, and so the podium is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just caution the board to be careful about how we discuss this matter, because Mr. Witten is here. He hasn't been noticed. And if his job performance or character is brought up, it would be a violation of law. So I realize that puts some constraint on the board, but I think this is a good opportunity to look at the general ideas of what a county manager does, look at what the law requires, look at what some other counties have done, and then look at the exhibits that I've added on to this item. And let me just briefly say the first one is a marked up version of the Story County job description that I worked on. It has a draft date of 7/27 down in the bottom. And the idea that I started with was trying to make it simple and straightforward. And so you can see the underlined italic text is new. The strike through is portions that have been removed. And second in there is the 2007 county manager existing job description. And the third is suggestions from Austin Osborne, HR director, and he has put in suggested text under knowledge and ability. It's page 3 of 5 on the qualifications. I would just briefly say there are a couple of different ways to approach this issue of a job description. I was given a copy of Lyon County. They have an ordinance that actually sets out the requirements, the job requirements for the county manager there. In looking at it, it seems a little cumbersome just because to change it would require going through the ordinance process. There's also counties, I believe, that use policy issues to sort of put constraints on the duties of the county manager, and I think those exist usually in conjunction with something else. I think Story County has some policies that interact with the county manager duties. The final other opportunity is to use a contract, and I think quite a few counties use contracts and actually put job duties within the contract itself. I don't believe there's a contract here. And basically what is present in Story County is the job description. And so this is sort of open discussion as to what you think of the proposals, the initial one, the existing one, or the suggestions that Austin has put forward. I think it would be good just to get general directions, and then we can come back with something more concrete.
Well, I like the work you've done on this so far, and I don't know if the other two commissioners have had time to read in this entirety, but this is just the first step. So gives everybody time to dwell over this and come up with, you have any ideas for improving it or change of language or anything like that.
If I may, just to point out some of the changes that I've put in there. On page 1 of the first draft job description that is in there, if you look at job summary, the last sentence basically says, without limiting the specific duties and responsibilities that the county manager may be assigned by the board, the broad activity areas for measured achievement are, and then there's a list of specific items. What that does is it puts performance requirements into the job description. I don't think the current one has that. The 2007 does have an annual review that is required that the county hasn't used at this point, But the idea was that if there is going to be a review, you would want performance criteria that you would look at. And so these are fairly general areas. And so that's a small change that was made to assist in job performance review. What I've done is basically redone the list of duties, and there's a slight dilemma there, because it would be nice to list every duty possible, but you'd end up with this huge list. What I tried to do is cut out some of those, and so I think I ended up deleting three or four of examples of job duties. And again, I think the idea is that you want a general concept as opposed to a lot of minutia as to what the manager's job is. And yes.
Bob, would you go over once again and the differentiation between the three that I'm looking at here?
Yes.
One, two, and three.
The first one that has draft 727.17 down at the bottom, actually I drafted, and I put the changes in. So that would be the one that we're proceeding with at this time.
This is your new draft, taking into consideration the past written documents and making the changes that you believe are applicable.
Correct. So I would ask you to concentrate on that first draft in the exhibits.
And then if the other two?
The second one is the existing county manager's job description that was drafted in 2007. If you look at the last page, it says March 2007 on the bottom. And I didn't do the research to verify that it is, but I was told it was, and I'm operating on the idea that this is the existing county manager job description at this time. And so if you look at the one that I did, the changes are to this existing one.
That draft. And then number three?
And number three, Austin took time to look at it, and I would ask him to address what he would like to see in that. But it's an alternatives that Austin has suggested.
So this is a third alternative that came from Austin's desk?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Morris. Austin Osborne for the record. On the copy provided, the third exhibit that Mr. Morris referred, it was in color, and didn't show up in color on this one. So from this point forward, I'll be using underline. But I can point to you the major areas where I provide a comment. And if you want, I'll just go page by page. It's pretty simple. On page 2, and it's listed as page 2, items I, J, and K, I had added. At least a portion of I engages with economic development team. All of our upper management does those things. J represents the county on a variety of regional boards and commission, such as Pat representing EDON, for example. And then K representing the county in court of law, testifying on matters pertaining to, litigation, whatever it is, pertaining to the county. I had suggested removing the two items under Section 4 qualification and then replacing them with all of the knowledge and ability to items that are bulleted on page 3 and a portion of page 4. And I think Bob had a couple of those in there that may not be showing up as the right color, but most of those were added. And then under licensing and education on page 4, section 5, I had added to the second bullet point, the one dealing with a bachelor's degree, adding other education may be considered based on other qualifications and experience. And then under 1, 2, 3, and 4, bullet point 4, dealing with 5 years of increasingly responsible experience, at the very end, I had added, in an open political environment. I think that's pertaining to the county manager. And then on the back page of 5, the first section deals with physical requirements, and it spills over to the following page. I had changed 50 pounds to 25 pounds. 25 pounds is typical to an office environment, not 50 pounds. That'd be typical to a public works type of position. And then on work environment, I had it added in the middle here. Work is typically performed independently with reporting directly to the Board of County Commissioners as appropriate. And there may be a thing here or there that may have been added to, but those are the most substantive. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mullers. And thank you, Commissioners. Thank you, Austin.
And I want to say that I did add some of what Austin recommended. Some of the smaller changes I added in. What I didn't change was the qualifications, ability, and knowledge section. And so that may be one that the board would like to look at. What is in the proposed draft that I've created and what Austin has proposed as an alternative. And that's under knowledge and ability of qualifications. And so I think Austin has expanded on what I had put in. And so it, I think, would be helpful to have you read the two and decide which one is preferable. And we can do another workshop depending on how you want to proceed. I don't think there's a real rush to get this done, but I think it's important. And as Mr. Chairman has said, that I think there's some other ones that may be worth looking at, and this would be a good template in the long run.
So we actually have, it seems to me, two decisions somewhat to make in looking at the three drafts and considering the impact of each would be one element. And the other element would be to make a decision as to whether we use an ordinance, a county policy, or a contract. Is that right?
Correct.
So do we have some comments on that specifically?
Well, I did briefly. I know D.A. Langer thought that the ordinance had some benefits to it, and she's not here to express her views. But I think it's kind of a cumbersome way to do it. I think having the job description is adequate as an alternative to the job description. A contract is something that I think is pretty commonplace. I don't know if Story County is really ready to have a contract with the county manager at this point.
I think Douglas County, don't they have a contract with their county
they
manager?
They do, yes.
They do.
And the duties are included in the contract.
Yeah. I kind of lean towards policy myself because aren't all the rest of our department heads under policy, Austin? We don't have any contracts or ordinance.
Mr. Chairman, Austin Osborne, for the record. That is correct. Our policy dictates how our classification plan works. The county manager is the one that does approve the job descriptions for all of those folks, right. And that's where it ends. We have considered other things with various things, whether it's HR, whether it's another jurisdictional item for the county. And in some cases, like in this case, where you just have a job description, it probably provides, out of the three or four options, the most flexibility for the board to amend or adjust one way or another as the county grows and changes, without having to go through a full ordinance update or contractually being bound to something.
Okay. I have a question for Mr. Morris. So going forward, I noticed that Pat is here even though he hasn't been noticed. But in any event, because it doesn't pertain to him personally, but if we were to set this up as a contract and not ordinance or policy, that takes away it as an at-will employee, does it not, if you're under contract?
No, it can still be an at-will employee, but usually the contract is the more important part of it is the financial, like payment and car allowance and stuff like that. I do think you could put in job duties, and then to change that, once the contract has been signed, you'd have to come to an agreement between the parties. So in a sense, the contract locks you in at that point. And so many times county managers are interested in having that. But I don't see any outright benefit to it at this point here in Story County.
Okay.
Question. Pat, have you considered drafting for us? You have many, many, many years' experience here, and the strengths and the weaknesses and the challenges that go along with it. Would it be appropriate to have input from drafting of some type, bullet points from you personally?
Yeah, and I want the record to be clear. I appreciate Council Morris's, you know, cautions that if performance is going to be discussed, I don't look at these as performance discussions. I don't consider them performance instructions discussions. I think these truly are exactly what it is. It's a workshop to talk about how do we structure in the future. And I acknowledge that however much longer either I choose to work or you choose to have me work as the county manager, that certainly this could apply to me in that interim basis, whether it be through any of these methods. So I guess, Commissioner Gilman, to answer your question, we could look at a number of ways. I mean, Austin has given me the courtesy of limited review, you know, like, what do you think? And there have been tweaks and edits, you know, that I've talked about. Well, you know, I think economic development might have been one that, you know, I suggested, hey, we kind of take the team approach to this, but... So that process has been ongoing. And if I may weigh in on the contract, and this is just my personal opinion, I want the record to be clear. Number one, I'm not asking for a contract. I've never asked for a contract. I prefer not to have a contract, but that's only as it pertains to me. And there's several reasons for that. The real reason is, as I look out, there are essentially four department heads sitting out there between Melanie, Sherry, Hugh, and Austin. None of those folks work under contract. You know, I don't think I should either. And I don't, well, let me rephrase that so we're not talking about me. I don't think the county manager should. I've often said, pardon the crassness of this, I only have to know how to count to two on any given day and make sure I never irritate two of you enough, you know, that I find myself noticed with 3 days to come before me. But that's okay. You know, and I think that's flexible. I would probably tell you about 50% of my peers probably operate under some level of contract. And the contracts generally have things that I don't think are important that I think policy can cover for that. For instance, severance. You know, I mean, severance when there is no due cause or whatever the phraseology is. We don't need that. We have policies, and we've tried hard over the years, and I think that's where either a job description or a policy or a combination thereof, you know, can reflect that the same rules apply to me should either I retire or you severance me out as apply to any employee in this organization, or more importantly, any general government employee, perhaps not covered by police or fire labor contracts. Because that's the general rule of thumb is we treat our non-represented people, the folks you see out in that audience and myself, exactly the same as we negotiate with the AFSCME contract for general policy. Vacation buyouts, sick leaves, those types of things. So I would be happy to provide more input. I'll be very candid with you. I haven't read Bob's. I was tied up with Hot August Nights when that was done. I'd be happy to compare the two, to work with them, assuming that's appropriate. I'll follow the direction of this commission as always.
The thought that, comes to mind, just for sake of general discussion, and I am by no means, underlined five times, rushing you out. but as we contemplate these next steps, and perhaps none of us will be here within the next 24, 36, 42 months, but the time is coming. And it seems to me that transitionally, we're entering a new phase for this county. We're growing, and there's a lot of fiscal items to look at, and the pains of growth and all those kind of things. And all I look at when I ask that question is, you've had so much experience in the back that perhaps you're writing the job description for your predecessor and giving us some guidance as to some of the things that you've seen of the strength and the weaknesses of the desk. And some of the things we might want to think about. So if you kind of remove yourself from it, it's not being written for you. It's being written for the next steps that might come into our community.
I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I'm up for that challenge.
Okay. So what do you suggest, Mr. Morris, that we go ahead and agendize this in 2 weeks from today, and we'll go move over it again and see?
And if that gives us enough time...
Let's make it, that doesn't give us enough time. Let's make it 4 weeks.
That sounds good. I can sit with Austin and go through his changes and see if there's anything that we can agree on and change ahead of the meeting. Again, I would recommend looking at specifically the job qualifications, because I think that's something that the board is responsible for the hiring and firing of the county manager, and it's up to you folks to decide exactly what you want in the position. And so I think it's crucial that you give it a good study and make any suggestions. And if you want to call, talk, I'd be happy to do that. If you have written suggestions ahead of time, that is also helpful.
Should we just forward them to Austin and he can share work with you on that?
That works well.
If I may also, too, and again, I hope Bob takes this in the spirit in which this meant. I worked with Bob in his draft documents for several years now. I think you have really two... things to really discuss, and following your suggestions, Commissioner Gilman, I might try to, you know, at least provide an opinion and weigh in. You have the form, and then you have the content. You have the structure. Bob, please, again, no offense, but I know enough of Austin's work. I know enough of the hundreds of job descriptions that I sign, you know, for everybody below me. Whether it's authorized within my job description or not, I will tell you Austin's format follows precisely, again, what we have for everybody else. You can take the general administrative clerk, the comptroller, every one of those, and that format is that way. So my suggestion is, again, we look at the format that Austin has taken, the knowledge, skills, you know, physical requirements and everything that are embedded in all of our job descriptions, and then we compare the actual duties that go within that form, the content.
And not to get back at you, but I believe that I did use Austin's form.
Okay.
And so that's one of the things I did do is use basic his format and many of his things like physical requirements, things like that. I tried to use the standard text that he had provided. Before we finish, I was just going to say that Mr. Witten did show me a letter from a Juanita Cox. She asked that a letter be read into the record. I'm not sure how the board normally does this, but there's a paragraph here that I can read just to get it on the record, and I believe the clerk has a copy of it already.
Okay, go ahead.
It says, for the record, I want you to read this in this letter, and just skipping down to the third paragraph, I have recently been informed that there was going to be an agenda item which intends to give greater power to contract to the Story County manager. I believe this is unwise and wish to express my opposition to giving greater power to sign contracts to any county manager employee. We, the people of Story County, elect county commissioners to make those decisions during noticed open public meetings and need these contracts, et cetera, to come before the public at commissioner meetings, et cetera, to be discussed, approved, signed. I would just point out that this is a workshop. I believe that the text in the job description does not have the county manager being responsible for contracts unless the duty has been delegated by the board to the...
I think the individual simply read the narrative of the agenda and didn't read the text. That's where the misunderstanding came from.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have nothing further. And
okay. Is this good for you guys? Maybe not next meeting, the meeting after. Here's time to review this and come up with some ideas.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. And I'd love to have some feedback from Pat as well. I think he gave us some bullet points that we need.
I think Bob's done a great job so far, too. Of course, with Austin's assistance there, putting it in his bullet points. Mm-hmm. All right. Anybody else in the audience have any comments on this? Come on up, Mr. Phillips. You had your hand up first. We don't have to start the clock, do we?
No. Gentlemen, Sam Toll, Gold Hill. I do appreciate the clarification. I too read the packet. I didn't dive into the actual text, and I just looked at the three versions and started to glaze over, wondering where I was actually at and what was actually being discussed. To clarify, the county manager will not be able to encumber the county on any contract without the direction of you three gentlemen, and that direction can only come in open meetings. Is that a correct statement? Good, because the Declaration of Independence kind of talks about the right of the just governed at the consent and the will of the people. And so anything that happens behind closed doors is counter to that and something that I'll jump up and down on. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Anyone else? Mr. Phillips?
Yeah, Mark Phillips, Story County resident, speaking to the item number 13, discussion only. Workshop for revising county manager's job description. You know, if you look in the statutes in Nevada, the job description for county manager is less than half a page, I think. You know, it's up to the county commissioners to be clear about how the county manager will serve them. It's important to note that, any new board of county commissioners can just decide they don't need a county manager anymore. It's not a career. It's up to the county commissioners each and every time new commissioners are elected to decide whether they want a county commissioner or not. And I also noted in reading this that the comptroller's job is directly tied to the county manager, so there was no mention of that. I saw nothing in the job description allowing the county manager to appoint county officers without the approval of the Board of County Commissioners. And I really resent the fact that of no college education required. You know, that there's jobs that pay $10 an hour, you need a master's degree. You know, if somebody's writing up a job description without a college education, I bet they didn't go to college, you know. Those are my concerns.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Hearing none, okay, let's move on. On to number 14, discussion of possible action. Consideration of possible action to approve contract with Nevada Department of Health and Human Resources, Division of Healthcare Financing and Policy, also known as DHCFP, and with the Nevada Department of Health and Human Services, Division of Welfare and Supportive Services, also known as DWSS, regarding the administration of services, determining the eligibility of applicants, and the eligibility of medical services provided eligible applicants for Medicaid payments and addressing the county's portion of those payments.
I hadn't planned on presenting this one. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Loomis drafted the staff report, and I believe has been in contact with the Deputy Attorney General from the state agency, the Department of Health and Human Services. That said, I am under the understanding that there really are no substantive changes to this. This is a usually these are two-year contracts that are essentially state-mandated through legislative acts. These were the infamous unfunded mandates over the past many legislative sessions where the state provides a service, but they have the right to bill back portions of it to the county. I would propose you have two ways to go. You can, based on my limited knowledge and belief that this is a contract renewal, and has been vetted by both Mr. Loomis, therefore its appearance on the agenda, and also by the state through their Attorney General's office and these departments involved, Department of Health and Human Services, you could go ahead and vote to renew it, which would be my recommendation. However, my feelings won't be heard at all if you wish to continue this until such time as Mr. Loomis can be here to provide the additional background.
I believe this is a renewal, and it does go ahead. It's retroactive back to July the 1st.
Yeah.
It is a two-year contract.
Yeah, the reason why they draw those up and make those effective July 1st is so they match whatever the legislature does to us in each session, and then the new contract reflects any of those changes.
How many years have we had this contract?
Good question, Mr. Gilman. Unfunded mandates began about 2009 or 11. And I would probably tell you somewhere in that time frame when the legislature came back and said, you know, you're gonna participate. I might also add, to the best of my knowledge, and I'm looking for our comptroller to verify this, or perhaps our treasurer. I noticed in the staff summary that presumably Mr. Loomis prepared, the bottom paragraph talks about by imposing an ad valorem at the rate of 8 cents per $100. We currently are at 1 cent per $100 in our indigent fund. We generate, again, through TRI, and I think this speaks very subtly but very powerfully to statements like, what do we get because of TRI? We get about up to 7 cent per $100 relief on our property taxes right now because we generate so much out there that 1 cent's enough to adequately fund this each year as Hugh goes through the budgeting process. Does that make sense?
Yep.
There's no rush to pass this, though.
if you were at the state and you want it signed yesterday, like July 1st.
Yeah, July 1st.
Yeah. Well, it's, I'd rather have the DA here.
Okay. You want to wait? You want to wait 2 weeks?
Yep.
Okay. I mean, I'm good. I'm good with waiting if you want to. I was good to pass it now too, just because of the fact that it's been prepared. It's been prepared and recommended for approval by Keith.
But there was some unanswered questions there.
All right.
So, we're going to take public comment.
Yeah. We'll open up for public comment. Not too much interest in this one. Okay.
So. I'll make a motion to continue this item to the September 5th meeting here in the Story County Courthouse.
Yeah.
I'll second your motion.
Moving to second to continue item 14 to September the 5th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, this is going to move us on to number 16. So at this time, we're going to recess as the Story County Board of County Commissioners and convene as the Story County Fire Protection District Board. Mr. Osborne?
So you're actually hearing number 17.
That's right. So item number 17. Discussion of possible action, approval of modification and extension of collective bargaining agreement between the Story County Fire Protection District, which is the employer, and the Story County Firefighters Association, IAFF, Local 4227, which is the union.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, Austin Osborne. For the record, we have engaged in closed session since February when we began negotiations with this union. I think we're all pretty versed. For the public's purpose and for other reasons, I'll give a very brief overview of what we have in front of us today. After all the back and forth that had occurred since February with all of our bargaining, we have agreed to a two-year contract. The two-year contract will essentially, in salaries, provide a 5% increase year one, a 4% increase year two. A two-year contract, I think, is beneficial on both sides on ours. Is instead of a three-year contract, which is more typical, it'll allow us to revisit our economic budgeting situation that may exist in 2 years based on all the different growth that's occurring in the area and what may be occurring out at Tri-Center with other matters. So I think a two-year contract is actually, I'm definitely happy to propose that. Really, the goal in this bargaining session was to look at a regional compensation study, which had occurred. We used an independent firm, Honifex, that also did a review for us for other positions in the county, such as the general employees. And then I provided a review of all that material and worked with a Honifex group to make sure that the pay that they're looking at is commensurate with what's going on in the region. The comparisons that were provided in this area included Churchill, Lyon, Douglas, Carson, Reno, Sparks, and Washoe. Reno, Sparks more for a indicator, not necessarily as to align with them because they're much larger jurisdictions. In that study, it really became a goal to try to get our contract aligned as best as we could with the median of what's occurring in the region with all of those counties, some of them much lower, some of them higher, and then also work in an environment, if we're all in this room familiar with the ability to pay environment in 288, NRS 288. So there's give and take that occurs over an eight-month period with the union as well as the fire district. In what ends up in a final contract, and that's what we have in front of us today. I would argue that we are at the median for the region. In some areas, we're quite below the region. We still have no dependent care coverage and our health benefits for those folks that are hired on or after 2014. This is an absolutely huge item to bargain because if one effect, one goes up, then the other contracts have the ability to rebargain and potentially go up with it. I talked with HR folks throughout the region, including in all these counties, and they have fought for years and years and years trying to get health benefits even moderately under control. Forget zero. 50%, 30%. And when they do, it goes right back up to 70, 80, and 90%. It's a very hard item to get out of a contract. We've successfully been able to do that in all three of the contracts applicable to our county. The rest of it is really there's a lot of cleanup in this contract. NRS cleanup and alignment, Fair Labor Standards Act alignment and cleanup, and clarification. You'll see a lot of language in here, especially in Article 3 regarding wages, where there is an example of John Doe makes this much money, this is how he gets paid. It was beneficial because the union had submitted quite a few grievances throughout the last contract because we knew how they got paid. And I think it's beneficial for everybody to understand under a 7K exempt type of group that has 24-hour chefs that they understand their pay. A major item that you'll see in here is there are changes to the Fair Labor Standards Act payment of our fire staff. We had worked under the old contract under a 29-12 work year. That means 2,029-12 hours of work in a year. We really had followed this over the years because some of the other jurisdictions in the region had done that. And since about the time I've been on board in this area, all of us, myself, the comptroller's office, the fire chief, and even private counsel that we have hired, as well as the district attorney's office, we all felt that, why don't we revisit this and make absolutely 100% sure we're correct. And we found that there was some adjustment needed in that. So that adjustment is needed and is reflected in this contract. The union had offered to have their attorneys in Washington review this from the IAFF. I certainly 100% welcome that. I'd like every attorney in the world to review it if possible to make sure we're paying overtime correctly, and their union concurred with our group and our attorneys, and their attorney concurred that we are now doing this correctly. Before anything is approved, if it is approved, I have some little modifications. I would like to just go over a couple pages. There's a couple little things, typos, that are going to be proposed to be fixed. And then I'll ask for comments in your position.
Okay. Go ahead and walk us through it.
Okay. So if we go into the contract language, and I'm using the markup version when I do this. Actually, I'm not using the markup version when I do this. I'm using the clean version when I do this. And the clean version is obviously shorter than the markup version because it doesn't have the markup. So I should be there in a moment.
Well, that's it.
Okay. So in the clean version, I'm going to go to page 9. And on page 9, we had used the word EMT. They're now advanced EMTs, so it's called AEMT, so I added A. On page 10, I added A to all the EMTs and that as well.
Wait a minute.
You don't see that.
On page 9 is now what?
Instead of EMT, it's AEMT.
AEMT.
It's advanced EMT.
Okay.
And the same exact thing on page 10, all of the EMTs are now AEMTs. It's the same person. It's just fire folks like to change their titles and certifications and all of that quite often. On page 36, this is Article 30, by the way, acting in higher classification. I had changed where the narrative says TEN, 10% in addition to the numerical representation. That's added. On page 42, get to it states 14.5% is what the numerical shows, and then there was narrative that says 10. It's not 10 anymore. 10 went away. 14.5% under incentive pay is the new one. And there's another one in here, but I'm not where my tag is. I don't have a tag on it. If you can give me a moment. I might have to just say it to you. It's on Article 3. My tag fell out, but it is Article 3. I'll get to it here in a moment. In his article, page 7, you don't see this language. I'm going to read it verbatim. This was tentatively agreed to, and it didn't end up in the final draft. It reads as follows. An employee who is promoted to a higher classification must move to the next closest step from his or her former position and must receive no less than a 5% increase in base pay. So when you move from a firefighter to a captain, you move to the next closest step and you get 5% at least raise. And that is it.
Very good. Thank you, Austin.
You're welcome.
Okay, so at this time we'll open up for public comment. Wearing them down. All right, commissioners, can I get a motion to approve this collective bargaining agreement with the firefighters?
Based on the recommendation by staff and the tentative agreement between employer and union, I, Jack McGuffey, approve modifying and extending the collective bargaining agreement between Story County Fire Protection District and the Story County Firefighters Association, IAFF Local 4227.
I'll second.
We moved in second to approve this collective bargaining agreement. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, at this time we're going to adjourn as the Story County Fire Protection District Board and reconvene the Story County Board of County Commissioners. Next up now, item number 19, approval of modification and extension of collective bargaining agreement between Story County, the employer, and the Story County Sheriff's Office Employees Association, NAPSO, NAPSO, Local 9110, who are the union. Mr. Osborne.
All right, thank you again, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Austin Osborne for the record. I'm going to repeat some of the things that you just heard, but we're dealing with the Sheriff's Office collective bargaining agreement in this case. Same thing, we have begun bargaining on February 2nd for NRS 288, have been bargaining since. I will say in the overall process that this group was stellar to work with. They were very reasonable, ultimately through the process and being able to come up with something that is mutually agreeable in a contract. This one is a 3-year contract, which is, I think, ideal. You get beyond 3, I think you get a little bit dicey, and 3 at least gives you 3 years of, you know, the environment in which you work. In this case, we did the same exact thing. We had worked with the Pontifex Group that did a regional comparison study of the low, the high, and the median for sheriff's deputies, but corporals in this case was a little bit different, and then sergeants make in the region. That region included, in this case, Churchill, Lyon, Douglas, Carson, Reno-Sparks, again, just as a note not to compare Reno-Sparks to Story County at all, Washoe, and Pershing was added in this one as well. And so what really we're trying to do in here is look at the urban folks and then look at the very rural folks, kind of like the Tier 3 counties that are very small. And then we realize that Story County is a little bit of a mix of that because you've got the small town element, but you also have a county spread out over 5 communities and the things that are going on at a tri-center, et cetera. And so in this case, really the goal, again, like the last one, was to try to get around that median area with some skewing over toward the smaller county pay because we really don't find ourselves to be commensurate with the larger urban jurisdictions. In this case, the old contract had a 2-chart system. There was the chart for the folks that had been here before 2014, and then there was for those that were hired after 2014 were just put on a separate arbitrary chart. The union had asked very strong, can we get everybody on one chart? A lot of bargaining had happened between February and today to try to make that happen. And I think what you have in front of us is fair, getting the new hired folks onto one chart, but doing it in such a way that they didn't see massive increases or any kind of change. The pay chart that you see here, we're going from a 7-step chart to a 10-step chart, so it takes longer for an employee to get from the bottom to the top. And then when you look at that 10-step chart, that really applies to all new employees. It applies to new hires. Existing employees on or about 2011 and later, that's all those people are in that 10-step chart, and that's really what I would call the standard chart. You'll notice that there's a step 11 and 12 and 13, and the numbers are a little bit goofy in that area. They seem quite a bit high, and they are high. What that 3-step area is for
our employees that have been working for this office way back right after Del Carla was on board as our sheriff, that had over the years accumulated COLAs that had followed these people throughout the years. What has happened is all different employees were hired at different times, so nobody has the same number of COLAs as each other. So the payroll office and the comptroller, every single timesheet, have to calculate for every individual all these past COLAs that are attached to them, and then they have to add their regular rate to that, and their overtime is based on that, and their shift differential, and all these other little things that come into play are based off of those COLAs. The union and my office and the comptroller's office and every one of us have asked, can we somehow get these COLAs out of our system and just make a dollar amount that these people make and never do COLAs again? That was a very challenging task to do, to try to come up with every employee and create a customized situation for them, group them together, and then come up with a chart that shows a dollar amount that doesn't affect all the other people, because if you put everybody on that, you would see there'd be substantial increases for everybody that didn't earn them. There it is. It's done. And I'll give credit to the union. I'll give credit to our staff. I'll give credit to the comptroller's office. We all work together to try to come up with something creative here. So you'll see the large numbers on that really are a modest increase. It's a 2.0%. I don't want to use the word COLA, but an increase based on cost of living, we'll call it that. But it attaches all those past COLAs that those folks had made that they already had entitlement to. It is not new money. Generally, the chart in this does not have across-the-board increase. What it has is putting everybody on the chart about where they were and then getting the chart up a little bit, 2 or 3 or so percent, right around there, between 2 and 3 percent, where they did see an increase that would be based on a cost of living condition. I don't want to use the word COLA, but it is a COLA, and try to get everyone on that. Did I make that clear, or did I just make it very complicated?
I don't know. I think you've explained it to us about 30 times in the past. I think I got it.
Okay. Health benefits, once again, health benefits in this contract, anybody hired after 14, there's no health benefits for dependent cares. Per the Affordable Care Act, they are able to put their family on our plan, but they have to pay the premium. Really, I would say this group was really closest to interest-based bargaining that I've seen. We both had pretty much the same commonalities. We just wanted to get an agreement between us on where people land. Comptroller's office, as well as myself, I've done some fiscal analyses along with our office, and that is about it. I'm happy to field any questions or concerns that you or anyone else might have.
Any questions for us?
No.
Nothing there? Okay. Okay. Open up any public comment regarding the collective bargaining agreement? Hearing none?
Okay. Based on the recommendation by staff and the tentative agreement between employer and union, High Commissioner Jack McGuffey approved modifying and extending the collective bargaining agreement between Story County and the Story County Sheriff's Office Employees Association, also known as NAPSO, Local 9110.
I second your motion.
Okay. I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right, as we already indicated, we're going to go ahead and continue item 20 to the September 5th meeting. Brings us up to item number 21. This is discussion of possible action, approval of business license, second readings. Mr. Whitten.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be looking at Mr. Morris for this one, not for guidance, but for hopeful engagement down the road. We obviously have a new community development director, and with that, I think we're asking ourselves in a very healthy way, you know, why this, why that, why have we always done it this way? And I think this might be a pretty good time to blow the dust off the process that says why two readings, what can go on the consent agenda as opposed to not. We certainly don't want to violate the spirit of, you know, public disclosure. I have no problem with that. It's just what is an effective use of time rather than a bureaucratic use of time. My suggestion is what you're seeing now, for instance, on item 21, and actually for that matter now on the consent agenda for first readings, is you only see the ones that are good to go. We have a number that I would say are in kind of suspense and holding, where we are looking at them for inspections, for compliance in the past. You may have noticed some of those stayed on for months. You know, anymore now, when you see an item on the agenda, I can tell you it's good for a first reading, it's good for a second reading. There's some question whether or not we really need two readings, so we'll be hopefully working with that and seeing what other jurisdictions do and what the law requires or allows. But all items number 21 are now ready for your approval, so that is items A through items KK. And I guess, as we have traditionally done, I will read each and every bloomin' one of them. A1 Electric, Inc., ADL Construction, Inc., AFC Robotics, Nevada, LLC, Bees Antiques, that's in Virginia City, Baron Group, Dynamic Concrete Cutting, LLC, ECS Group, LLC, Forever Christmas, Inc., in Virginia City, Groves Construction, Inc., Gers Roofing, Heating, and Sheet Metal, Hexagon Metrology, Inc., Innovative Lightware, J.B. Hunt Transport, Inc., Jimboy's Tacos, Kuma Engineering Company, Labor Works, Inc., Leone Engineering Products and Service, Mackey Mansion Museum, Miles Architectural Group, MIME USA, LLC, Motor City Programming, One Source Water LLC, Peak Technical Services, S&S Tool and Supplies, Silver Peak Construction Services, Single Ply Systems, Inc., Spiroflow Automation Solutions, Springer Industrial Equipment, Inc., Thermatron X, Inc., VizTech LLC, Zion Robotics and Controls, Cache Valley Electric, Chart Lifecycle Inc., Collar Mine in Virginia City, CNA Engineering, Comau LLC, and finally Custom Painting and Decorating, all to be approved, item A through KK.
All right. Any public comment regarding the business license second readings? Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve items A through KK.
Second.
Moved and second to approve all items. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Now we come up to the item which everybody waits for the end because they can hardly wait to get up here. Item 22 is in public comment. This is a notation. There's 37 second readings. Of course, of those were some just existing businesses with new ownerships, but on the first readings, there were 39, so those are 39 first readings are probably all brand new. Mr. Cole, you have the floor.
Thank you. I apologize for taking cuts here, but I just wanted to clarify something. So earlier in the meeting, I was excoriated, or my work was excoriated, by Mr. Witten calling something that was clearly identified in a piece that I wrote as satire, as garbage. Clearly, you know, I don't have access to your sense of humor. However, I was very clear that what I was producing was, in fact, political satire. And if you couldn't figure out that the union representative's name was Joe Mama, then I really can't do much more to give you the hints other than, in fact, stating at the bottom of the article that, in fact, was satire. As I described earlier today, I've spoken with both Mr. Hunt, with the communication director and senior analyst at the tax, the Nevada Board of Taxation. I take my job seriously. I do as hard a job as I can when I'm reporting facts, to use facts and to represent the reality as it exists when I'm writing it. So I just wanted to point that out and reflect on a piece that I shared with the Nevada State Controller, Ron Knecht, who I met in Reno, and basically who penned a piece stating the lamenting the role of the press in Washington and the Beltway, and how they really are pretty much not doing the job that they used to do in the days of Edward R. Murrow, and to suggest that I'm not perfect, but I do try hard, and I try hard with facts, unless I'm being a smart aleck. Thank you.
Thanks.
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. I'm actually up here on behalf of Judy Cohen, who couldn't stay till the end. She asked that I make a request to the commission, or suggest that the commission consider putting dumpsters in various locations around the county for those of our residents who don't have the funds nor the transportation means to funds to actually have garbage picked up or the transportation means to be able to take it to the dump. She mentioned to me that she had a couple of neighbors that, you know, were putting stuff in her garbage can because they couldn't afford the pickup, and I'm just here to put forth that request on her behalf. So consider possibly having the county put gigantic dumpsters out for people to dump trash instead of usurping other people's trash.
I'll share a little story. For the first 10 years I lived in the Highlands, I had a neighbor secretly putting their trash in my trash. But I looked at it in a kind of different way. It's like, okay, if it doesn't get dumped the proper way, it's going to end up all over the Highlands. So.
Well, I'm just saying, she's noticing that that's happening. I know, you know, from a county standpoint, that if you put dumpsters out, none of us would pay for trash pickup.
Your story,
so I'm
just. Judy's story just kind of reminded me of that day.
Thank you for the storytelling. Any other public comment? Hearing none? Meeting's adjourned.